Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, providing knowledge, professionalism, and information on insurance issues, commercial or pleasure, boat and crew, Petersburg Insurance offering asset protection on the water or at home.
Jay?
Here.
Bob?
Here.
Cindy?
Here.
Eric?
Here.
Mark?
Here.
Kurt?
Present.
Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, we have a full assembly today. The manager's off on a business trip, so he won't be here today. But now it's time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we've got a full room here today for people listening out in the radio audience. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, and that's approval of minutes. We can do them both at once or separately to the will of the assembly, but I would recommend we approve the minutes of the regular meeting from February 22nd and the special meeting minutes from March 1st. I'll entertain a motion to do that.
Don't move.
I'll second.
Been moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Loggadakis to accept the regular meeting minutes and the special meeting minutes. Any changes, or all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we approve those minutes in the meetings. Now it's time for approval of today's meeting agenda or to amend the agenda. Is there any changes proposed by the Assembly? Okay, all those in favor of using the agenda as presented, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, we will go with what's on the paper. Okay, now it's time for public hearing. And this public hearing is on Ordinance 2016-02, and that's an ordinance adopting the comprehensive plan dated February 22nd, 2016 for the Petersburg Borough and there's some changes have been put in there since it was originally put out to us by the Planning and Zoning Committee. So anybody in favor or anybody that wants to talk during this public hearing, now's the time. Just come to the microphone, state your name, and say who you represent. And we also have like 7 or 8 letters that are going to be read into the record as well. So, okay.
Hello, my name is Kevin Stelmach. I represent myself and a bunch of lodges across the Narrows, Island Point Lodge, Green Rocks Lodge, Majestic Eagle Lodge. To begin with, you guys all told us before that there was not going to be any kind of zoning out of Papke's, correct? Was that what the plan was when this all came through?
That's what I recall.
So why is this happening now?
Excuse me, what was the
beer
question?
There's a zoning going on, right? Is that what this whole thing's about?
Before that, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
They said there'd be no zoning at that piece when they originally went to the whole vote on this borough.
I don't know that it was promised.
Okay, I think
it was spoken out, and that's just as good as...
Excuse me, before we get too far into this, we have... There's a lot of people in the audience that are probably going to want to talk to this, and also the community funding thing. But Kevin, if you would just... Give us your perspective, you know, give us your opinion on it.
Yeah, the opinion is we own land. I've owned land since 1989 out there. I have businesses both on the Seven Arrows and the other side. And for me to go ahead and I have permits now to go ahead and do what I want to do in the next 5 years for a warehouse. And if this comes along, it's what's, I can't do it in without another permit or what's going to be the deal?
I think probably the best person to answer that would be the Liz about the details of this proposal to change, you know, to implement some kind of zoning. I've read it, but I don't fully, you know, understand the magnitude of it. Liz, could you give your opinion on what planning and zoning changed?
Mr. Mayor, adopting the comprehensive plan in and of itself doesn't create zoning at all. So nothing, if you adopted the plan, nothing changes outside of Service Area 1 and nothing changes inside of Service Area 1 in terms of zoning. If the borough decided to do some sort of land use or zoning outside of Service Area 1, that would go through a whole separate process. And that process hasn't really been determined yet. So the assembly could say, you know, yes, we want to just go ahead and do it, and that would go through the Planning Commission, and there would be public hearings to implement that. Or the Assembly could say something like, well, we don't want to do zoning unless there's service areas, or however, you know, that turns out to be. It's the implementation part of it has yet to be determined. What the comprehensive plan is saying is at some point in the future, we should start having that conversation about what land use should look like outside of service area one. And the way it proposes a little bit more in detail, saying the type of land use that we would envision that would work outside of service area one is a very minimal type of zoning, where just about every use is a by right use, meaning that you would never have to get a permit to do a warehouse or run a home business or anything like that. The only type of use where you would look at some type of permitting is a use that would have a detrimental impact to neighboring properties. And we would envision things like perhaps an auto wrecking yard, a gravel pit, and that's really to be determined by the people that live out there. At what point do you want to say and what happens on the surrounding properties? So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, Kevin's
We just need to know what the clarification of the situation was going to be, and how we can go about it to have our word in it, since we have no word.
Sounds to me like it's definitely not going to be outside service area adopting service area one zoning.
Well, that's what we want to kind of.
So I think we're still on the same page.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to be. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. Any other visitors' views related to people want to talk in a public hearing on ordinance 2016-02. Harold? Just when it becomes vacant, just step up and state your name and who you represent.
All right, Harold Madalyn, representing myself, and I've looked over the draft comprehensive plan update, and I dug out my 84 comprehensive plan and my, whenever it was, 2000, and every 15 years we do this, and go through all the stuff and then generally ignore it as far as any planning goes. And I noticed in the 84 plan, and I was involved in that one directly a little bit, and parking was a huge issue, downtown parking. There's 11 pages about parking and what to do about it. And since then, I've noticed, although you guys did buy the Randert property, a steady erosion of parking spaces along Main Street. There's the cutout for the Scandia house. There's the totem pole parking. And anticipating a lot of a shortage of parking space, I rode my bicycle down here, and how priorities change. I noticed that the recycling bins are blocking the municipal building bicycle rack. So you may, I would encourage you guys to move them to the side or something. But anyway, I've had the good fortune to spend the last 40 years traveling around Southeast Alaska, doing various things and working here in practically every town and village. I've at least visited it. And I particularly like the smaller villages. And one thing they all have in common is, well, they remind me of what Petersburg was like when I was a kid. And they don't have any zoning. They don't even have building inspectors in most of them. And people, they're all carpenters. People build things, and by and large, they don't fall down. And they save themselves the trouble of hiring somebody to go out and tell people what they can't do, and to have a planning commission to deal with all the wrangling over it, and it seems to work pretty well. And where I grew up, right across the slough over here, our house was on part of the property that at the early days of Petersburg was supposedly the biggest sawmill in Southeast Alaska. And I don't know if any of you guys have seen this, and I only heard about it 20 years ago, but there was a dock that went all the way out to, from the south side of the slough, all the way out to Deepwater and Wrangell Narrows, where they loaded lumber. And you'll have to look at a picture that's 100 years old to see it. It's been and gone. And when I was growing up, there was a fairly major boatyard across the street from us, and we'd play down on the beach and pick up copper paint can lids and throw them like frisbees and whatnot, and expose ourselves to all that stuff, and didn't seem to harm us. Singly Alley and over on the bridge was that kind of dense housing near town that is talked about in this latest plan revision. That's all moved on and changed, and in spite of any zoning or anything. So anyway, I noticed reading through this latest revision, the Z word comes up a lot, and extending these things to outside the service area one. And you know, I was talking to a guy that was a real staunch borough advocate that I was selling fish to, and he said, oh, no, they're not. I said, you know, the thing that people object to out in these outlying areas is the planning and zoning and building inspectors come in by helicopter or whatever they do, and he says, that's not going to happen. That's not part of it, not at all. And I think maybe somewhere 100 years down the road there might be a need for zoning, or 5 years or whatever, but I think that the way you guys should treat that, you should go through and strike all this zoning-type language in planning outside service area one, and wait for the residents of that area to come to you and do it like a local improvement district. Say, if you get a petition of the majority of the residents, say, hey, we need some zoning. We need a building inspector. I built this shack and it fell down, you know. That's when you guys should take action, and not until then. So I hate to see that language in the comprehensive plan. The one last thing I'll give you is that in the 84 plan, they had a really succinct thing about waterfront land use, and they said, you know, the residents at this time prefer a mixed use of waterfront land. Some people want to live in industrial, some people don't want to live next to industrial, this sort of thing. But they said economics is going to determine it. If a bunch of old houses or, you know, somebody buys them up and wants to put a boatyard in there or put some kind of facility in it, it's going to happen. You don't have to plan for it and make it happen. It'll happen on its own. So, anyway, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Al, for your comments. John, I see you had your hand up. You want to go next?
Don't worry, it's not a Bible. Mayor and assembly members, thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is John Mergus. I am representing myself. I live at 300 Papke's Landing Road, been there for 27 years. I have concerns about the addition A, generalized land use maps and definitions, more commonly referred to as zoning, in particular the immediate Papke's Landing area. This comprehensive plan was on the assembly agenda for the December 21, 2015 meeting. So I attended the meeting and I sat right up front, right pretty much where I'm at now. And I remember the zoning issue was brought up by this assembly and discussed by the planning department, Liz. And I remember well certain words and comments from Liz, including, quote, transparency, public process, lengthy discussions. Liz's concern was that zoning should be considered as an option. The zoning proposal was an idea, not a plan, is what my understanding was at the time. Over the decades, I have had many interactions with Petersburg Zoning Ordinance and staff. I've always been impressed with their diligence of public process and their outreach, including direct mail to those who may be affected by zoning issues, with ample opportunities to participate in decision making. So at the end of that December 21 meeting, I was relieved and expected that process to continue. So I was paying very close attention to the advertised agendas of all the public meetings, looking for the critical words zoning or land use, expecting a dedicated meeting to something so critical and sensitive, nothing. Then 2 weeks ago, at the last assembly meeting, is the first reading of this ordinance. I had to read it several times before I caught the six-word addition on page 2 that included zoning. I was stunned, embarrassed I was so misinformed by myself. I guess the critical meeting I missed was the February planning and zoning meeting. There was nothing on the agenda mentioning zoning or land use. I listened to the meeting on the Internet Archives, and there were no visitors, no substantial discussion on the comprehensive plan other than float houses and tiny houses and wood smoke. And then suddenly, there's a quick vote, and then here it is on the proposed ordinance. And so I disagree that this is public process and transparency. My gripes are, Liz said that her main concern is protecting neighbor from neighbor through zoning. In my 27 years at Packy's, to my knowledge, there has never been a need for such protection. That's why we all live there to begin with. Zoning has way more potential for conflict than without. I understand no one has complained about potential zoning, and that's because almost everyone is as confused as I am. Why has no one from the borough asked us, we residents and property owners, if we want zoning? Do we count? It might cost $100 for a direct mail survey, and I'm sincere, not being sarcastic. Lastly, why is the borough so timid and not more forthright on the zoning issue? And it really shows on page 2 of the No Rights Created paragraph. It says this ordinance is not intended to commit the borough to any particular action. But in the very same sentence, it says the policies set forth are, quote, aspirational. And that's a pretty fancy word. I looked it up in 2 dictionaries. Both say the same thing. I'm going to read it out of Webster's here. Strong desire or ambition, as that's for the word. Yes, strong desire or ambition. So it's contradictory. It's ambiguous. You know, in the same sentence, it says, "Hey, don't worry about it. This doesn't mean anything at this time." And then it says that if you pass this as it is, it means you're dead set on zoning. We love this community as much as you do and want to keep this a great place to live. Please consider an amendment dropping the land use line and go back to the drawing board on zoning outside of District 1, and let's all work together, and it will not at all dilute the comprehensive plan. Thank you.
Thank you, John, for your testimony. Anybody else want to participate in the public hearing?
My name is Mike Stocks, and I'm representing myself and maybe a couple other neighbors that aren't here. I live at Papke's, and this is the first time I heard about this new zoning thing, and it was from Mr. Murgison there, stopped by yesterday. So I just wanted to know a little more about it, and I feel like this is just another extension of the borough grasping on to us out in another area for the almighty dollar in the long run. And I feel like this thing should be discussed a lot more than just, being adopted to go forward on it. More meetings, more community participation in it and whatnot, you know. I don't know, it's a big move for me, it sounds like. You know, I wasn't for the borough, still ain't. I love Petersburg, I wouldn't move, but I just feel like this is another chokehold on the landowners out there, and you should take into consideration what the people think.
Okay, well, I think that will take place through the process if there is any zoning implemented on any area of the borough outside service area number 1, and that's my feeling anyway. And I believe what Liz said is the process that will take place to get to a zoning will more than likely, in my opinion, should be requested by the people that live there. So let's hope that that's the method that's used. So any other comments for the assembly, or anybody else want to testify?
Hi, I'm David Statham. I'm pretty much in the same position as the last guy. I live out in Papagee's Landing, and it looks like this might be a little bit of an overreach, simply because the people out there haven't been notified, except by this guy that lives out there. As I see it, the main concern that I see is because of the distance between here and there, and because of the slightly different type of people that live out there than here, we don't really have sufficient representation in the council to to make our opinions known. The way I think they should be. And so what I think would be better would be to have multiple voting areas, one or maybe more than one in town, and particularly multiple voting areas out in Zone 2. So that each issue that affects a particular area gets presented specifically to the people of that area. And I would want something going forward like this, planning stuff, opening the way to include something like that.
Okay, so you think there should be different voting precincts?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's allowed with the way they redistrict the areas in the state. I'm not totally familiar with that, but I know there is
at least something to consider,
right.
Better representation for the outlying areas.
All right. Well, all the meetings are open to the public, so we'd like to have input when we're making decisions. I do. Anyway, so.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Anybody else want to testify underneath the public hearing for ordinance 2016-02? Kathy?
I wasn't planning on coming here to speak about this, but as far as public notice and opportunities to comment or participate, that's been going on for about a year now. I myself just, I'm sorry, Liz, but I've been trashing all the stuff that's sent to my house to read the comp plan. So I get offensive on there, take offense to that you guys aren't putting out enough information, because you are. So that aside, a comprehensive plan is just a basic plan that says this community is what it wants to do. It's not definite what it wants to do, but it's there to help you when you go in front of legislatures to say, yes, our community has a plan, and for the future, we may or may not follow it. But at least we've sat down, we've put some thought into it, and here you go. So anyways, it's not detrimental. It can be changed.
Thank you, Kathy. Anybody else? Dave?
Yeah, this is Dave Kensinger. I'm on planning and zoning, and right now we have a vacancy on planning and zoning. So if anybody out here that's interested, all you have to do is give your name to the mayor, and we have a meeting tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And that's the process that this would go through. But my understanding of the comp plan, there was nothing in there that talks about zoning. It was specifically not in there. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, Liz. But it did talk about, like John said, land use designations. That's not zoning. And there's a whole process that's got to go down. And you guys got to approve it before it even begins. And this document isn't really the beginning of that process. It could be if enough people out in service area 2 want it to happen, but I don't think there's a will for that. So, but just remember, there's a vacancy. All you have to do is give your name to the mayor.
Yep, we've been advertising that for quite some time, so there is opportunity to participate. Anybody else want to testify under the public hearing on ordinance 2016-02? So I guess the public hearing will be closed at this point.
We
have 7 or 8 letters to read. They're all from different people that testified here in person.
This letter is from Adam DeRochere. Dear representatives of the Petersburg Borough, I am writing to express strong disagreement with Ordinance 2016-02. More specifically, with the proposal to implement zoning and code enforcement in areas outside of existing city limits. It is my opinion, based on personal observation over the course of 40 years of living in remote areas of Southeast Alaska, that this move can stifle development and commerce for decades to come. It would seem that this effect would run counter to the goals of the borough if those goals be to enhance the community and tax base of its outlying areas. Furthermore, it is self-evident that no agency of the Petersburg Borough is equipped or prepared to enforce such regulations or to provide the necessary services that would be required to justify the cost of these new regulations. Please carefully consider the choices and desires of the people to be affected in the areas included by this ordinance. I believe implementation of new regulations so soon after the sting of the recent annexation will further the resentment of the borough by its new members and lead to breakdown in those new relations. There may come a time when such an ordinance is both necessary and appropriate, but if so, that time is many years from now, and the decision to do so needs to be solely in the hands of those whose lives are to be most affected. Thank you for your consideration. The next letter is from Deb Hurley from the Flower Farm. I would like to comment on the comprehensive plan as it pertains to generalized land use maps and definitions. All of Papke's Landing is proposed as rural village with intended use residential, including home-based businesses. Our business, the Flower Farm, is located on Rory's Road. We established our business in 1997 and have been an active business ever since. We do not live there, so it is not home-based. As I understand the classification, we would have to apply for a conditional use permit to continue. I am asking the Assembly to consider removing the proposed land use designation at this time. The land use does not have to be designated to pass the comprehensive plan, and it would benefit us to have more time to comment. Thank you.
Can I ask one question of Liz? Liz, does that hold true that they'd have to get a conditional use permit to continue their business in that area?
I wouldn't think so, but I'll, you know, since we don't really have anything in writing specific, but I'll just tell you, as far as rural village, it talks about residential and residential scaled uses. So that's sort of code for we're not going to want giant industrial type uses there without a conditional use permit. So things that are scaled more at the residential size, it's more of like a form issue, like the Flower Farm or like a bed and breakfast or maybe a retail store that is not, you know, a Walmart, is kind of a by right use. Again, things that would require a conditional use permit would be very specific, like we would specify those in the code, and they would be things that would have a really high impact on neighboring uses. And I'm sort of throwing out examples, but these are just examples because, again, there's no ordinance written, and we haven't really talked to folks out there, and you know, it's just sort of our sense based on what the language is in the comp plan or kind of what we envision.
Okay, so then again, it'd have to be public hearings.
Yeah,
and so a whole other level of public disclosure.
Right, and I mean, I guess the example I can give is I talked to folks up in the Mat-Su Borough where they have something similar, and what they did was went out with a survey and said, if one of these uses occurred next to you, you know, which ones would you want to stay in? And things that came back were like rock crushing business. The one that was interesting was racetracks. I guess they have a proliferation of racetracks up there. And so people were concerned that someone would build a racetrack next to their home. And that was one that they wanted to see under a special land use permit. When it got to implementation, if it gets to implementation here, that we could, you know, do something similar where, you know, do any of these uses concern you? Like if someone was going to put a rock pit next to you, would you want to have some input on that? Or a racetrack next to you, would you want some input on that?
Okay, thank you for the, we have a couple of, Bob?
Quick,
go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I was just going to say, Liz, your statement there saying once it's implemented, that could infer to if we pass this into comprehensive plan, and that's not what you're saying.
Right, it's not what I meant. Right. I mean, if
let's just make sure we're clear about that. That just because this is in the comprehensive plan does not mean that this immediately goes into practice and we're going to come out and start billing everybody higher and forcing everybody to have permits and stuff. So that's not what this is saying, this comprehensive plan. Okay, good. I just wanted the clarification.
Thanks for making that point, Curtis. Yeah. Bob?
But in the plan, the recommendation from the contractor was is that you have the conditional use permit if you have a rural mixed use. I'm not saying we're putting in this in place, but that is the recommendation as I see it right here.
Right. It's not that any use is prohibited. Right. What we're saying, where there's a higher impact use, you would ask for a conditional use, some type of conditional use permit. Yeah.
That's what's on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jay?
So, simply put, the friend can clarify it. The comprehensive plan does not in any way, shape, or form require a conditional use permit for a flower farm or a small existing businesses that Pat keys right now. This is correct, yes?
In and of itself, no. You're correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Cindy, you got a comment?
I actually have a couple questions of Liz and a comment. Correct me if I'm wrong, but planning and zoning could implement zoning if we ever got to that place that said grandfathered, we would grandfather in existing uses, and I think that's been done in other places before. So unless there was some compelling reason to make the flower farm change their business, I wouldn't see that is probably likely to happen. I wanted to ask you, Liz, though, do the outlying areas have to form a service area before we would create zoning in those areas?
That's really the assembly's decision. The borough has the authority to do land use throughout the borough. So we don't need, you know, at the legal level, we don't need the authority from anywhere. The borough has it. But how it gets implemented, that's going to be for the assembly, if and when or whenever, you know, that how that actually plays out is up to the assembly and the planning commission.
Thank you.
Okay. Kurt, you had another comment, or no? Any other comments by the assembly? And then if not, we'll get back to the reading of the letters.
The next letter is from Ty Cummins. To all the assembly members of the Petersburg Borough, it is my understanding that you are in the process of discussing how planning and zoning laws will be implemented outside of Service Area 1. I, for one, do not want to see extended planning zoning laws implemented within the Comprehensive Plan of Ordinance 2016-2. Don and Charlene Anderson. As residents in the Keene Channel area, we are very concerned that the implementation of the Comprehensive Plan will bring zoning and unnecessary government oversight to our neighborhood. We know that other outlying residents share this concern. Please be very careful as you consider the Comprehensive Plan and its impact on the outlying areas. We further suggest any plans for the extension of planning and zoning be subject to vote of the property owners in the subject area. Next letter is from Connie Bell. To the Petersburg Assembly, in times of zoning and planning, it is in everyone's best interest to encourage the Alaskan pioneering spirit, which has caused our state to flourish in the past and that we have all benefited so much from. This is especially true in remote outlying areas where the challenges are more difficult. The more freedom to express individual choices while building homes, businesses, and solving any problems that come up, the more inspiration, creativity, and industry we will see at an individual level, producing the very prosperity in our community that we all hope to see. This is something of great value to be gravely considered in our current economic climate, and for the long-term effects our choices will have on our children and the generations to come. The next letter is from Kenneth and Laura Howard. Mayor and Assembly members, throughout the initial stages of borough formation, proponents went on record promising folks outside the city of Petersburg, now Service Area 1, would not be subject to planning and zoning regulation. Now that we are a borough and formulating a comprehensive plan, it appears that some are pushing for regulation borough-wide. We have lived on Keene Channel year-round since 2004. To our knowledge, there have never been land use issues needed to be resolved. We know of one family only that promotes the idea of regulations. It happens that a member of that family is also a member of the Planning and Zoning Commission. We have spoken with many of our neighbors, and the resounding opinion is that we do not need planning and zoning nor regulation. Who would pay for the personnel to implement and enforce these unwarranted and unwanted regulations? If it's not broke, don't fix it. If such regulations someday become necessary, it should be at the request of those being impacted and will ultimately bear the expense of such regulation. It should be implemented by a vote of those folks. Our neighborhood, from Green Rocks to Duncan Canal, is sparsely populated, consisting of approximately a dozen year-round residents. We believe a greater need for P&Z regulations is in more populated areas. Perhaps P&Z's focus should be in areas, for example, where there are disputes between mental health lands, homeowner associations, and commercial activity. At a time of federal, state, and borough financial shortfalls, why would you even consider implementing regulation that are not wanted or needed and will only add to an already looming budget crisis? The next letter is from Jim Stolpe. Good morning. I will not be able to attend the meeting today. I would like more info on what P&Z has planned for properties outside service area 1, specifically properties past Blind Slough. Maybe one more meeting on what is planned. Thank you for your time and the committee's time. Those are the ones I have. Debbie has some more.
Debbie has a few to read.
There was a total of 12.
That's good. Public comment is good.
Yes. This is from Beulah Johnson. Dear Mayor Jensen et al., I have a real problem understanding how there has been a borough-wide planning and zoning started. My understanding was, when the borough was formed, that there would be no changes in government policy regarding certain plans, planning and zoning being one of them. I feel that our new borough government is not respecting those agreements. Can you do that? Another thought of mine is that we don't need regulations because we live remotely, and if we are offending our neighbors with certain constructions, we can deal with them personally. We also have little to fear about lodges, hotels, parking lots, shopping centers, etc., crowding our living space. Even private dwellings will be slow to appear with our dwindling economy. If, in fact, this planning and zoning business becomes an issue, I think the residents of the outlying area of the borough should be allowed to vote on their choice to have this become part of their lives. This should not be a decision for Service Area 1 to make. Respectfully, Beulah Johnson, Duncan Canal. And this next one is from Bastian Reed. Dear council members and borough officials, thank you for your service and dedication to this community and greater borough. I appreciate the time that you give. I understand the value and necessity of planning for the future, creating vision and goals, and meeting and exceeding those visions and goals, and appreciate the efforts to do so. I also appreciate that this is an open discussion and that community involvement and comment is embraced and represented by our elected officials. I would like to offer my input on the issue of planning and zoning beyond Service Area 1. First of all, it was very heavily implied during borough formation that P&Z laws would not be implemented beyond Service Area 1. Despite many concerns to the contrary, skeptics were hushed up as if their concerns were illegitimate. My concern now is that Petersburg as a community should be very sensitive to the concerns of those outside of Service Area 1. They are, after all, joined with us now as fellow borough members. I think it rather brash to so swiftly initiate such measures. Instead, I believe that we should embrace the wishes of the people affected by such laws. After all, isn't this the role of elected representative government? Second, I question the necessity to regulate and manage everything, everyone. The American people don't need a master, they need an opportunity, and opportunity comes by way of freedom. Every time we regulate, every time we dictate an ordinance, a law, a code, etc., we bind ourselves up. Don't get me wrong, we need local government, but limited local government and limited government in general. Limited government was the key that unlocked the unsurpassed growth and prosperity of this country. Limited government gave the people of America the ability to prosper like no other nation, and unfortunately, limited government is nearly extinct. I write this not to offend. I am not trying to accuse. I am simply trying to say that the people that I know don't want any planning and zoning laws outside of Service Area 1, and I hope that you hear our cry. I know that the intent is to plan and zone for a better tomorrow, but I am afraid that those good intentions are going against the will of the people. Third, I understand that revenue is usually the heart of these types of decisions. Building permits create work for borough officials and generate revenue for the borough as a whole, and so on and so forth. Though the borough faces budget crunches and our state is in financial trouble, I would remind you, so are our residents faced with these same issues. We are facing a tough economic future. Let's not burden our neighbors with additional taxation, as well as the added cost of materials in order to construct their shops, sheds, and homes to borough code. Fourth, let's uphold private property rights. Private property means just that, private. These folks living in the bush, as all Americans, deserve the right to use their private property in any way they see fit. They don't need an official set of rules to somehow trump their private property rights, thus rendering their private property no longer private, but public. I write to remind you to keep first things first. Let's give our newfound borough members and neighbors the ability and opportunity to live as they intend and not as we intend for them. Let's allow the American principles of self-governance to remain within the boundaries of our borough. Let's uphold the right to maintain the way of life that these folks moved here to partake of. And remember the role that you play as an elected official, the role of representation of the people. I have spoken to many Petersburg residents about this issue, and I have yet to find one person who is in favor of extending P&Z beyond Service Area 1. I would also like to remind you that you may not receive many comments due to the public's perception that the borough will do what it wants regardless of the will of the people. Many I have spoken to feel that it's pointless to write in. I don't believe that. I believe that you listen and that you will represent the people on this issue. I believe that you do have the best interest of the people in mind. Thank you for your time. I will be following this issue as I take seriously the way we treat and represent our neighbors. Boston Reed. And this one is from George Cole. Dear Assembly, as a resident on Keene Channel, I am concerned about the imposition of planning and zoning regulations being forced upon us by those who do not live in our neck of the woods. We have managed to live together for 30 years in peace and harmony without outside regulation. There is no reason to believe we suddenly need to be regulated by people who most probably have never passed by our land, let alone talked to any of us about our needs, desires, or lifestyles. I believe that any planning and zoning regulations in our remote, off-grid locations should be handled as LID efforts. If a majority of us want P&Z in our area, we should approach the Assembly and ask for a vote on the subject. If we do not want P&Z, it should not be forced upon us. And you promised during the tumultuous borough formation process you would not be forcing such regulation upon us. Live up to your promise and leave us alone until we ask for your help. Sincerely, George B. Cole. And this is from Tyler Reed. Dear Assembly members, first off, I would like to thank you for reading and taking my opinion into consideration. Keeping planning and zoning within the boundaries of Service Area 1 was one of the many promises made during the city-borough transition. I personally reside with my family within Service Area 1 and am taxed accordingly. I agree with these taxes and have no problem paying my share for the borough to continue providing these services. I receive power service, sewer water services, enjoy clear roadways, we use the library and aquatic center as well. Now, with that being said, I do not agree with taxation of property outside of Service Area 1, especially those not connected by road, Point Agassiz, Duncan, Keene Channel, etc. Those people who own cabins or residences receive no services from Petersburg by way of public works, sewer, water, power and light, or garbage. I have heard the argument to this being that they use our schools, library, etc. One solution is for people outside of Service Area 1 to pay a membership to use these luxuries that we, the people of Service Area 1, already pay for. Back to planning and zoning. Along with not taxing the properties surrounding the borough, I strongly oppose a division of planning and zoning for these areas. The only benefit for anyone with this proposition is to provide more money through permitting and penalties to the borough. A good number of these properties do not meet code immediately following the passing of this proposition. I see several foreclosures in the future, forcing the borough's newly acquired taxpayers to leave the area. Some of these structures are not inhabited year-round. I see the borough creating a difficult environment to come in and develop. Our economy is suffering dearly. We need to stop turning immediately to more taxation. I encourage a more conservative look at the local budget and our spending habits. You, the Assembly, have a chance to keep this an easy place to live. The residents and cabin owners that live outside of Service Area 1 are a blessing to this community. They shop here, they get fuel here, they get supplies here. New money is brought to town from these properties. I see no benefit to extending the reach of the Planning and Zoning Commission. Please think hard on this one. Vote no on planning and zoning extending past Service Area 1. Thank you, concerned resident taxpayer Tyler Reed. And this is from Butch Young. I understand that regulations that apply to the city proper are being considered for the remote areas of the borough outside of the city and even off of Mitkoff Island. I am specifically interested in rules that apply to Point Agassiz. The residents and landowners at Point Agassiz receive no services from Petersburg Borough and do not wish to receive them. The recent fire at Muddy River is a prime example of the difficulty in supplying even the most basic of emergency services to the area. Landowners who have property in the Point Agassiz and Muddy River area, as well as those in areas such as Keene Channel and Farragut Bay, bought those properties because of their remoteness. We provide our own water, garbage disposal, energy, and septic services because we want the Alaskan lifestyle of being off the grid. We pay taxes without objection because most of us live in Petersburg for the time being or have strong ties to Petersburg. Putting a layer of bureaucracy over us, which is not needed or desired, is an imposition by the borough. During the formation of the borough, there was an understanding by landowners and residents outside Service Area 1 that we would not be subjected to the building codes and other requirements of the city. Now it appears that the borough is looking for new funding without supplying services. It could appear to many that the borough is seeking to expand its employee base by increasing the area where its regulations are required. As a resident of Petersburg, I have seen the borough implement policies and procedures that are unpopular, but lead to an increase in the borough's responsibilities and broadens its authority. I do not wish to see that type of system transferred to the remote areas. A case in point is the recycling program. From the viewpoint of someone who is not a borough employee or member of the borough government, it appears that the current procedures developed thusly. The PIA began the recycling effort as a contribution to the community, and it worked well on a volunteer basis. Then the borough decided to enter the process and supplied bags. A contractor was employed by the borough to pick up the bags. Then it was decided that the borough should provide the service supplied by private enterprise. Then it was decided there should be containers provided by the borough. Now we have unsightly blue recycling containers all over town, taking up space in our yards, carports, businesses, and garages 24/7, so the borough can come by once a week with a new recycling truck and pick them up. And glass can't even be recycled. The fishing village character of Petersburg has suffered with the addition of the blue containers. The things that make this town attractive to tourists and residents are being eroded, slowly but surely. Please do not extend the regulations of the borough to remote areas. If this is being considered, and hopefully it is a rumor, please have the courtesy to advertise public meetings before making the decisions. Sincerely, E.L. Butch Young.
Is that it for the letters?
Yes.
Okay, and since we're still under public hearing for this ordinance, is there anyone else who would like to speak to this, to come to the microphone and state your name and who you represent?
Matthew Garretts. I own property out the road there at the radio tower land. And a lot of passion about the subject here, and I think most of the passion is just that, like, just for me personally, I found the map without anyone asking me what I intended to use my land for. And based on someone's assessment of what, you know, the general area looks like, you know, it's easy to make a blanket, you know, statement about what it all could be, but without asking the people that actually lived there before forming the map is, I think, the real issue. And John's right, Mergus, you know, this thing being slipped in with it is not a formal, it doesn't set it in stone, but it certainly creates a working template that already, you know, is using words that kind of create the potential future where, I mean, based on if it were to eventually pass in a more official sense, you know, I may need to get a conditional permit for my towers, say, where, you know, had someone asked me, you know, I don't have a real clear plan. I have a lot of, you know, bigger plans, but it might not fit into the rural village template, you know, and I guess me as a citizen, you know, would just appreciate someone coming to me and asking, you know, rather than, you know, trying to slip in a planning and zoning meeting when it's on their agenda, you know, where you can make a comment before the map is even drawn. And I don't think it's an inconvenience just to take the map out of the overall comprehensive plan and then, you know, come to the people specifically property by property and say, hey, what, you know, where do you see your life and this property going in the next 20 years? Is it a lodge? Is it a boat storage yard? Is it a, you know, are you going to live here? And then let's make the map, and then make the map official, rather than, you know, slipping in a map that isn't even official that kind of sets the tone of where things might and potentially will go without asking really anyone who lives out there. I guess that's, and I don't think it's a huge inconvenience just to take the map out and go, well, let's still pass the comprehensive plan, but let's talk to the people who live out there, see where they want the direction of everything to go, and then, you know, you can, you know, pass an ordinance, you know, amending that new map, you know, to the existing, you know, and just, you know, everyone take a deep breath and wait a little bit rather than getting the carriage before the horse.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
I'm Chris Fry. I'm the chair of the Petersburg Planning Commission. I guess our intent when we were developing this was to provide the map to say this is generally what we see. This is not, it's a place to start. But it also, we have to talk about the fact that there's really three parts to this. One, it's got to be the discussion, do we want zoning outside of service area one? Two, what do we want our zoning to look like outside of service area one? And three, planning is a separate part from zoning. While the Borough Assembly can do zoning, for them to implement planning by the Borough Charter, it has to be through a service area. So people have to realize that there's two parts to that whole thing. So you're not going to have building permits until the planning part kicks in. So, and that's what everybody has to understand. And this is completely an open process so that what we tried to put forward was something that just gives some general feel. Maybe if we're going to do it, this is what we're going to do outside of service area one. But it's not set in stone. It's just kind of a roadmap to look at for the future. But for zoning to happen, that has to be done through Borough Assembly. There has to be public hearings. There has to be a lot of input from the people on that. That's the first part of it. Then for the planning part, as the Borough Charter states, that has to be done through service areas. Okay? I hope that answers some questions. Thank you.
Thanks for your perspective, Chris. Anyone else want to testify on this public hearing for Ordinance 2016-02? Okay, the public hearing is now closed. And that brings us to the next item on the agenda, which is bid awards, and there aren't any today. The next thing on the agenda is visitors' views related to items on today's agenda. So this might be a good time for the community service organizations to come and give a presentation, if they're so inclined, about our funding this year. One thing I would like to ask that be added to all of the people that are applying for these grants is to put a detailed financial statement in there, like if you have holdings on property or your bank accounts. Just, it's going to be tough times financially, and if some people have a better wherewithal to take a little bit of a cut, and other people that don't have the wherewithal to fund their organizations, it might help us make a decision as an assembly. So I talked to the clerk or the finance director a little bit about this morning, and there is no detailed financials for these organizations that we have in our hands. So with that being said, it's time for visitors' views related to today's agenda. So anybody want to speak to their organizations? Nobody's running
up. Supposed to be at 1 o'clock.
Sorry.
My name's Sunny Rice, and I'm a past board member for WAVE. So I wanted to talk to you and give you a little bit of history about the request from WAVE. I worked with the WAVE organization for the last, 12, 15 years. And it has been our goal for a long time to get to a position where we weren't completely dependent on call volunteer advocates like myself who have other jobs and then also try to take calls. And we've been really fortunate to be able to hire someone for the past 6 or 7 years, I'd say. At one point, so the expenses for an employee and a location where people actually can know that they can come and find a person to talk to are the biggest and most important expenses that WAVE incurs. And for a while, the city was giving us space up at the Romead building, which was a real great boon. And then the Romead building's gone, so now we're paying for rent. So, and I think as you may have or you'll hear from Annette, we had a grant from the state that was for new and emerging programs that sounds like it's ended, and we all know what's going on with the state budget situation. There are some other alternatives that I know that the WAVE board is now looking forward to, and hopefully we'll be able to get those within the next year or so. So it really is WAVE's intention to be a self-sustaining organization as much as we can. My concern, having transitioned from the 20 years ago all-volunteer organization to the organization that we have now with a paid employee, is that if we lose our paid employee, the organization is going to dissolve. And I personally don't have the energy to keep it going as a non-paid employee position. So I think the request for 1 year of funding to help us get through to hopefully another grant is reasonable. And I think that the board and the staff really intend that that's all it will be. And if you have any questions about the history of WAVE, I've probably been with it longer than the other folks that are here, so I can answer those, and then I have to go to my meeting.
Okay, any questions of Sunny?
Just real quick, Sunny, and actually I asked this question of Annette, so it's more of a statement than a question, but I asked her if we could get her partial funding from cobbling through our what's available, if that would be enough, say if we got you rent and part of her salary, and what she is telling me is yes, that would be a possibility.
Yeah, so. I think so. The community is incredibly supportive of WAVE, and I think we could do what we could to make it happen with partial funding, but the issue is really if we lose the paid position, I'm afraid the organization's going to go away. Thanks.
Thank you, Sunny. Tom?
Tom Abbott. I'm here representing KFSK,
And the question on the financial information, what was it?
Well, I...
Because provide financials.
You did. You know, it'd be nice.
Oh, I was going to say because I've been, I submitted
today.
Audited.
We're just asking for these organizations that are asking for grants from the borough to, you know, come and you know,
sure.
Say why, and then there's not going to be any decisions made today. It'll
certainly
go through the
right.
You know, the budget process with the first readings at the next meeting. But just maybe have a detailed list of assets, and so we know as an assembly who's worth what.
Sure.
You know,
I think
to make
the mayor
decision.
Wants more of a balance sheet rather
right.
than just revenues and expenses.
Got it. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, I'm here, as you know, as was submitted for a number of years now. The city of Petersburg was providing a grant of $8,000, and last year also $8,000 with the borough. But I have submitted for the first time in a long time a request for an increase to $19,000 for the services rendered to the borough and to the citizens of the borough. But I did an analysis, and I do annually around budget time, about the services that we provide, and I was looking at specifically the services that we provide to the government, not to the citizens of the borough, which is far more so, but specifically more to the services of the borough and the government, the different departments that are within the local government. Much of the last discussion that we were just listening to. We provide a lot of information, a lot of public notices, a lot of public service announcements that present all of this information that we just heard. We have been broadcasting all of that information, all of those meetings, all of those decisions, and the schedules of events has all been on the radio. And the radio station is reaching the entire Petersburg Borough geographic area. So, that's one of the services that we provide to keep the citizens informed, to help the local government get its message out, to provide good feedback, allow for informed citizens, allow for the government to educate and inform the public. Aside from far more detailed services provided this meeting being broadcast. Tomorrow night's school board meeting will be broadcast. There is a lot of broadcast time that we provide throughout the year of live events and also through borough formation seems to be the topic of the day. Borough formation, the meetings on the radio through that year process was amazing, and it was an amazing amount of feedback that we had. There were forums for discussion. The Boundary Commission meetings that were held here in Petersburg, those were broadcast on the radio. It's an amazing resource to this community, and I appreciate the support that we've been receiving from the citizens and also from the government, and really greatly appreciate it. As we all know, there's a state fiscal crisis that we're going through. KFSK is suffering through that as well, with less state grants that are coming to the station, and we are working through that process. If we look at just the governor's numbers last year and this year combined, it'll be a 45% decrease in our state funding. The way the numbers are looking in both the House and the Senate right now, it's a full elimination of 100% cut. And that number has not budged as yet. So that's where we stand now. And again, as I stated in what I had submitted to you in writing, the analysis that I had, the services rendered are equivalent to about a full-time staff position if I add up all the services that's provided to the borough government. And again, even more so if we look at all of the citizens of the borough.
Cindy?
I have a question, and I want to compliment KFSK has knocked themselves out to do fundraising and increase their own revenues, and I recognize that effort because I know it's taken a lot of time and energy to do that. I wanted to ask you, because Eric Castro had asked if it was appropriate to use TRT funding to fund part of KFSK's request. And my recollection, but correct me if I'm wrong, is that you have done remote broadcasts during Little Norway Festival or 4th of July. I know you have your calendar of events online, and that gets hits from all over. I know from being involved with your membership drive, you even have international listeners, so you're reaching way beyond the Petersburg borough.
Yes.
PSAs and Muskeg messages. But particularly the remote broadcast was one that I couldn't remember if you did that or not, and that potentially could be something that would hit visitors.
It's something that I'm very sensitive. I appreciate the fact that you mentioned the fundraising efforts. I'm sensitive to the fact as to how much effort we are putting in, for many reasons. Transient room tax monies, I have always taken a step back from that, allowing other nonprofits and other agencies in town to step forward and go after that money, leave us out of it. Because I believe that more, our mission is really more for the residents here. Yes, we do have a vast mission that does actually expand into visitors and that sort of thing. But I've always thought that it was far more appropriate and allowed other agencies the opportunity to go for that money while we were funding ourselves very well. This is next year is our 40th anniversary. It's been going very well for 40 years. But things are tightening and times are changing. So in those past years, I've always stepped aside and said I think it's better off for another smaller nonprofit in the community to go after that money and deservedly put it into their budget. So,
well, and I'm not talking about there are allocations already being made to other organizations. There's a little bit left over in that TRT fund, and so I'm trying to think of different strategies for cobbling together ways to meet requests.
I appreciate that.
Any other questions of Tom? Kurt?
Just one thing that you did forget, Tom, is that this meeting right now is on the air. And this could go several hours, two or three hours. Mm-hmm. And airtime's expensive. You know, so for the city to kick in a little bit more to make sure that everybody in the borough gets a chance to hear what we're thinking and then have a chance to comment to us on the street and so that we can form our opinions is priceless. So,
yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions, or Tom? All right. Thank you, Tom.
And, thank you.
I listen to the radio every day.
Thank you, Dave.
Sorry. I'm Dave Kensinger. I'm here for the Petersburg Chamber of Commerce. I know it's very important, especially in these very tight physical times, that the citizens of Petersburg know what you're getting for your dollars. And the Petersburg Chamber of Commerce Visitor Center receives $40,000 per year of transient room tax funding. And this is how we spend the money. The office is open and staffed 6 hours per day for 180 days. The office is open and staffed 8 hours per day for 180 days during the peak tourist time. And now the chamber phone is answered 7 days per week, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 360 days a year. That works out to $5.85 an hour. And that's the service that we provide. That's the main gateway for anybody that's got a question about Petersburg. That's where it goes. And it's a big service community. I know in these tight times, it's really hard to justify spending money on much of anything. So thank you very much.
And thank you.
I think we have sent all of our financials to Jody, so you have a good idea of how we're spending the money and what our budget is for the next year. Okay. So if you have any questions about what we're doing.
Any questions of Dave?
I just wanted to, I appreciate that you put this together. I think it mischaracterizes a little bit what's going on at the chamber. This is visitor center staff that you're talking
about.
And some of the visitor center salary is actually paid by the Forest Service, not by the TRT. It's both.
That's right. That's correct.
So the 585 is a little bit of a misleading.
Yeah, we get $14,000 a year in a grant from the Forest Service for the visitor center.
But right now, the chamber is actually only open a couple hours a day.
No, that's not correct. It's open 8 to 4 right now.
That's not what your administrator told me when I went to the office the other day and it was closed.
Well, as of our last meeting, John's there from 8 to 10. Marilyn was on vacation for the last month, and now it's open 8 to 4 every day, and then...
No, I said the chamber. I didn't say the visitor center.
Right. Okay.
Is only open 2 hours a day.
Yeah. The chamber is open from 8 to 10, and then the phone is answered 7 to 7. So we don't physically have a chamber person there all the time, but...
Right. It's the 800 number.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions of Dave about the chamber? Thank you, Dave.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Kathy.
My name is Kathy Reamer, and I am with, I'm the director of the Kwasa Museum. And first of all, I'd like to thank you for providing the grant funds that you give to us each year, because that is what we use to operate. I just would like to say that in the last fiscal year, the amount of money that you provided to the museum was $42,000, and our staff salaries totaled $38,000. The payments that we made to keep the lights on, the utility payments, were just under $7,000, and our insurance was $908. I just want to say that the money that you provide to us really, you get the best bang for your buck. $42,000 provides services for Petersburg 10 months out of the year, 11 months out of the year, and especially during the summer season when we have lots and lots of visitors. Are there any questions?
Any questions, Kathy? Cindy?
I had one question, Kathy, because I know you changed your hours a little bit this year. The classroom wasn't open for part of the year.
Well, the funds were cut 2 years ago, I understand. I'm brand new. 2 years ago, funds went from $48,000 a year to $42,000. And when that happened, they cut service 1 month of the year, which was January. In this past year, we were operations, just building staffing, were $3,000 over what was provided, and that was made up, with memberships and grants and things like that, and the museum store. But in order to make our the funds that I the $38,000 and the $7,000, that is just for staffing and to keep the doors open. That doesn't that doesn't take into account taking care of all the historical stuff that we have in our museum. So that costs money too, and just we got to talk to people, so we have a telephone bill and all that kind of stuff. But it costs more than $42,000 a year to run the museum for 12 months. And what has happened when the funding was cut by $6,000, they closed for 1 month. Mm-hmm. And then in this last year, the museum was open on Saturdays through February. And now we're open again from 10 to 2, which is our regular winter schedule, until May, and then we'll be open from 10 at 6 days a week, Tuesday through Saturday. And then we'll be open Monday through Saturday in the summer from May through September. So we were closed a little bit in February, but the doors were open and the phones were on, and people were checking the mail and the phones throughout the month of February. So the closure was mainly just for the during the week and so we're available.
Kurt, you have a question?
This is not necessarily for Kathy, but you know, you said you had a $7,000 a month or $7,000 a year electrical bill. This building is a representation of Petersburg. Why are we charging them electrical bill at all? That's just a question for the assembly. So I just wanted to throw that out there, you know, when we're looking at how maybe we can start massaging and changing the way we fund things, you know. I mean, I'm not going to put this out there for every building, but this is a building of our history. This is a building that shows people what Petersburg was made of and you know, and gives them a sense of what Petersburg is. And you're getting an electrical bill. You know, that cuts into your budget. I think that's something that I think we really need to reconsider here as an assembly on when we're looking at funding you guys, you know, in that state. So anyway, that was just a thought that came to my mind.
Yeah. Thanks, so, Kurt. Any other comments or questions of Kathy?
One thing I read in your letter to the assembly here was that you have an average of 3,000 visitors a year, which seems it's a high number. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that we had that many individuals, you know, using that resource, and I think that's it's astounding to be able to have that many people run through there.
I think that too. I mean, I'm learning a lot about this, and it's the museum's a pretty incredible place. And I want to say too that my husband and I travel in the winter, and we spend a lot of time in museums and other places. And most of the museums that I visit are either state-funded or city-funded. They are departments of the city. And like Wrangell is a city museum, Sitka has a city museum, Juneau City Museum, and so they're departments of the city. And I just want to say that if Petersburg has a pretty incredible museum, and it's being taken care of it has been taken care of very well in the past, and I think that it's sort of like a gift to the community, and it isn't very expensive to the borough, because if it were a city department, I sat in on the meetings the other day, the budget meetings, and if it was a department of the city, the cost would be a lot higher. So I just want you to consider our request again this year, and know that I really, if I could cut, I would, but I just don't see where we could cut any funds from what we've requested. So,
thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Any other community service organizations want to talk? John?
I'm John Haverlick. I'm speaking for myself. First thing I wanted to talk about was KFSK. I see KFSK as a life, health, safety issue for our borough. There are so many remote areas and so many people that don't have cable or can't afford cable, and cable really doesn't reflect our local town. But if there are any emergencies, tsunamis, fires, anything going on, like we just had a couple weeks ago with the escaped prisoner, KFSK was there right away telling people what was going on, letting them know to try to dispel rumors of what was happening at a very regular basis. They are an extremely necessary part to the safety of our community, our whole borough. And again, there's a lot of areas that don't get anything but KFSK, and it's something that we need to support wholeheartedly. Now I'm going to switch gears. The other thing that the chamber does, besides what Dave mentioned, is that we have a major role in Mayfest, Salmon Derby, 4th of July, Beer Fest, and the Christmas tree lighting. And we've already started planning for all of them. I've had three meetings this week and another four next week on all four of these things. So it's something that the chamber is involved in very heavily and has, like I said, has a major role in. Yes.
I just want to say, because I know, but maybe the other assembly members don't, Marilyn keeps a record of how many visitors she gets, and you could report that information.
Right.
And We didn't mention the two travel shows that we chamber sends.
We did three this year, thanks to the extra funding. And thank you for bringing that up. We Maryland just came back from the Seattle Boat Show that had 53,000 attendees, and quite a few came to our booth and talked about a number of boat regattas that are coming up here this summer, and she helped them orchestrate that and get them into town here. And she went to the Alaska Trade Show in November and the Marine Expo in December. So there are three shows that she's gone to and had a booth in and worked with promoting Petersburg. Thank you.
Any other questions of John? Thanks, John. I see on our list that there's two other organizations, Mountain View Food Service. Is there anybody here from that organization would like to talk? And if not, Petersburg Mental Health Service. Sue?
Hi, I wish I could speak without looking at notes like John just did. It's something I admire. I am Susan Omer. I'm the director of Petersburg Mental Health Services, and I'm representing myself and Petersburg Mental Health. I would just like to say that I really like the blue containers. Just want to go on record to say I think it's been really great for me. Thanks for letting me speak today. The responsibility for making decisions for others is never easy, and it's especially difficult when you kind of have a shifting landscape that you're having to deal with the state level as well as local funds. I don't envy your position. I respect the time and the energy you put into this, serving the community like you do. I think it's amazing. It's a lot of time, and it's a big responsibility. And I think you are very careful in the history of me coming up and standing up here. The borough has always been, they take a big responsibility and make sure they treat it with respect. There's many essential services that are offered in this community and are being represented in this room today. And one of them, a new one, is WAVE. And I just wanted to take a moment to support WAVE. Sunny explained things to you better than I can, but Annette has done a tremendous job in creating an active presence for working against domestic violence in this community. She's guided activities, she's supported volunteers, she's increased the number of volunteer advocates we have, and she's increased community awareness. I would hate to lose her. I'm still holding out hope that the state will realize, gosh, we funded this for 3 years just because it's an issue of timing. Do we let it die? I'm hopeful that they'll cover it for one more year, but if they don't, I really hope that the assembly finds a way to support them during this bridge year. Mountain View Food Service, I wanted to speak out specifically in support of them. I know firsthand that this service helps our elderly stay healthy and in their homes and live independently, and I know that's what we all want personally. I'm certainly not getting in line to go to the long-term care unit any day earlier than I have to. Mountain View Food Service is more than just a meal. It really can be the difference between poor nutrition and physical decline that means people can't live independently, or enough strength and health to continue being in their home. Their budget is as lean as they come from the last time I looked at it. I don't think they could cut any more, so I hope you fund it in full. KFSK. I didn't even know what to write down here. I don't even know how to express how important KFSK is to our community, and it's not really about the musical programming at all. By the way, I would start playing Christmas music the day after Halloween and continue till the new year, but that's just me. KFSK connects our town. It's a key part of our identity. I appreciate what assembly members have said in support of it today. I completely agree. They keep us in touch with each other. They inform us about what's going on. And we're still a frontier. We still need radio. Not everybody is, looking on their cell phone or spending a lot of time on Facebook, buy, sell, trade, and the classifieds, or listening to iTunes. We still need it, and I hope it, the increased funding goes in. Other areas that I feel strongly about, I'll just touch on the names of them, the school, law enforcement, a hospital, the library. I'm worth more to the library dead than alive. I put them in my will. So, Gary, I better be careful. Parks and Rec has done an amazing job. The museum and the chamber, all very valuable agencies. And then it comes to Petersburg Mental Health. So now it'll be us that I'd like to speak to. I've submitted answers to the questions that Jody gave us. So I don't want to take your time to just reread it. As you know, behavioral health care in Alaska is changing very rapidly in ways we don't really know. The state's trying to figure that out, and I hope they do. In any case, we're preparing for a very different future, as I described in our written request. Some of our preparing for change and changing staff levels while at the same time trying to promote stability has led to some tough decisions. We've decided we need to likely spend our fund balance at least over the next couple of years if we need to in order to maintain enough stability so that we can figure out how we're going to respond to the changing landscape. This year we adapted to a cut of $215,000. We're estimating an additional cut of $35,000 this year, which is less than we'd thought, so we're pleased with that. Like other nonprofits here today, it's not news. Grants are being cut. Unfortunately, administrative mandates have not. It's almost enough to make me a Republican. I've told Kathy, smaller government. So our mandates have increased. Certainly our need for services hasn't decreased. One of the things you may not know is that the psychiatric beds available in the state of Alaska have been reduced. For example, API, because they can't find staffing, have at times reduced their 80 beds down to 40 or 48, which means that all across the state, people who are an imminent threat to themselves or others don't have a bed. And so then it falls on the local community, the police, and the local hospital and behavioral health centers to basically hold people until we can figure out how to get them out and have a bed for them. So our local need has actually increased in terms of psychiatric emergencies. Several times in the last 2 months, there were waiting lists to get a bed. So to deal with the cuts that we're experiencing, a lot of behavioral health centers are letting direct service staff go. The state understands this. We've certainly been vocal about saying, we can't keep the staff if this is happening. And one of the things they've recommended is for little centers like ours to begin to consider a new model of emergency services like Haines just implemented. Haines is a small community similar, their behavioral health center was similar to ours. And according to the Haines director, their new procedure is after 5 o'clock and on weekends, if a crisis occurs, the person is to call a 1-800 number. And there, either a nurse or another person will speak to that person in crisis and try to resolve the situation. If they have not resolved the situation after speaking to them, then an on-call associate provider is contacted in Haines, and that would be a non-master's level person. And that non-master's level person would then follow a decision tree in talking to the person in crisis to determine whether there was concern about a risk of imminent suicide or homicide. If they can't resolve that, then the on-call master's level person is contacted. That is a procedure I would prefer not to do in Petersburg. I think that would just put more pressure on law enforcement as well as the emergency room. I don't know that people would call and talk to three different people before action would be made. I think they would head to the emergency room or the police would need to be involved. So we're going to avoid that model as long as possible. But that is one of the solutions the state is recommending us consider. Local funding will allow us to keep our current service level this year. We will still likely be spending part of our fund balance. And it'll also help us support people that don't meet the state criteria for services, the suicidal, the psychotic, the severely emotionally disturbed children, and the substance abusing people. If they don't fit those four categories, we're not we can't devote state funds to deal with that. This would allow us to continue to provide interventions and support to prevent them from becoming part of those populations. We also have Search providing services, as well as True North provide services. So there are other options. We're the option where you can bill we can accept Medicaid and Medicare. So a lot of low income individuals seek out our services, and we'd like to be able to continue to do that. I hope you decide to maintain support of all the agencies and departments here today. In making that decision, I hope you'll first consider what our community as a whole values and what the town needs. And after that, figure out how to pay for it rather than the other way around. I have confidence in Jody and Steve, our borough manager, to make measured and intelligent recommendations about what our community can afford and what we need. And their proposed budget, as I understand it, includes stable funding for community services for nonprofits. And I hope you will trust their judgment. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions of Susan today? Okay, thank you, Susan.
Thanks.
And we'll start the budget process at the next meeting, so we'll be discussing this. Okay.
My name is Annette Wooten. I'm here representing WAVE, and I just wanted to speak to you guys really quickly, see if you have any questions for me personally. Some of the nonprofits that are in this room face the same challenges that WAVE faces, where there may be grants and opportunities available, but they want to fund specific programs. They don't want to fund any operational costs. What we are asking the city for is to cover those operational costs for this one-year gap that we seem to have run into, to hopefully maintain the same level of services that we have been able to provide to the community for the last 3 years. You know, we're facing these challenges, but we're not giving up. We're definitely going to continue to research grant opportunities through federal levels, through state funds, any opportunity that might be available. And we will continue to fundraise and talk to community members to see what we can do to keep WAVE going at bare minimum. My intention is that we will keep our office space open and maintain the phone lines so that people can at least call someone if they need to. So.
Thank you. Annette, any questions of Annette or comments?
Annette, well, you know, it seems that your services have been seen as valuable to a lot of the citizens because, you know, as last year you had 21 people you had victim served, and so far you've already had 11. So mm-hmm. It seems that if that trend were to continue, you're going to have a whole lot more, and they may be decreasing your funding or, you know, trying to get you through this gap might be an appropriate solution, to, you know, in order to serve these challenged individuals.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Kurt?
Where are you guys renting from right now? Is that privy?
It is Tom Reinhartz who owns our office space right now. And we get a pretty good deal for the office space. I mean, we pay $600 a month, and that includes all of our utilities. So, I mean, I don't think that's outrageous and by any means. I think because we're a nonprofit, that's why we get a pretty good deal for that. And I really love that location. You know, we've looked at other possibilities of maybe going to the PIA building and getting a smaller office, which is definitely not off the table. We will still look at that. But that does change how we may be perceived by the community. We want, our name really says it all, Working Against Violence for Everyone. We want to make sure everyone feels comfortable going through those doors, no matter what race you are, what gender you may be, anything. It's important to me that everyone feels comfortable going through those doors.
Thank you. Jay?
Yeah, about the location. Check me if I'm wrong, but I imagine that centrally located, foot-accessible location has been helpful to your agency as well, or do you find it to be so?
Yes, it's been really nice being really close to the courthouse. So, you know, a lot of times, majority of what we do is working with people on protective orders and sitting with them in court on different hearings. Being right next door, you know, we can go into the courthouse and file those papers if needed. Sometimes people will get referred from the courthouse to us so that they can get more information about what protective order means. And, you know, upon our discussions, sometimes they realize that a protective order is not really what they're looking for, so that we do other options and
sure.
Maybe do safety planning instead of filing for a protective order.
Nice. Thank you.
Any other questions, Kurt?
This is more a question for Kelly. Kelly, I don't mean to put you on the spot right now, but if these services weren't available to us, you know, like the Petersburg Mental Health or even WAVE, what kind of burden do you think that would put on your guys' department, and do you have the manpower for that?
You know, it's hard to quantify it, but all these services are a tremendous benefit. All these folks have responded to the office to help people that are in crisis. They've responded to the field. They've been instrumental in follow-up after the police have left. They play a huge role in keeping our community safe and healthy.
So it doesn't matter who we pay. We pay them or we pay you.
Exactly.
Okay. I think it would be easier for you if we paid them. So.
I think so.
Right, thank you, Steve. Thank you, Billy.
Any other questions of Annette or comments by the Assembly? Thank you.
Thank you.
You're not. Is there any other views related to today's agenda?
You know, I just had one more comment. Because Mountain View wasn't here, I looked at their numbers, and they're the only organization that's actually asking less money historically than they have in the past. And for a total of, I think it was over 5,500 meals, it works out to about $17 to $18 a meal. I challenge you to order a meal and have it delivered to your house for that amount of money. So I just wanted to provide that perspective for them.
Thank you. Any other visitors' views related to today's agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to visitors' views unrelated to today's agenda. Anybody want to speak to anything that's not on the agenda? Okay.
Hi, my name is Katie Yuckley, and I am the Tobacco Prevention Control Grantee for PIA. And I would like to update the City Ordinance, Chapter 9.32, for the Smoke-Free Air Act of 2010. I would like to add to include electronic cigarettes and vapor products and expand the smoke-free distance from 5 feet to 20 feet. I would like to include the electronic cigarettes and vapor products as they may expose non-users to the harmful chemicals of their exhaled vapors, and they are not FDA regulated. I feel these changes are important because everybody has the right to breathe clean air. As determined by the U.S. Surgeon General, there is no safe level of exposure to secondhand smoke. Although at no particular distance is a safe distance from secondhand smoke, 5 feet is just not far enough, and secondhand smoke can still enter buildings and public outdoor places. As a non-smoker and a mother of young children, I find it very difficult to be able to walk anywhere downtown, as we are always walking into somebody's secondhand smoke. If there is a smoke-free distance that was expanded further, I feel that we would be able to breathe more comfortably downtown, not having to worry about walking into some secondhand smoke every few feet. I want to make it this point clear that it's not about the smoker. It is about the smoke and the health of our children and our community. To make these updates happen, I'm looking for a sponsor to help get these changes approved.
Okay, thanks for your input. Any comment with the Assembly?
Go ahead, Eric.
I just have one comment that, you know, is like trying to deal with like the logistics of the 5 feet to 20 foot rule. And whereas 5 feet kind of puts you out in the sidewalk, say for Harbor Bar, for example, 20 feet puts you in the middle of the street. How would we offer alternatives to those who choose to smoke? Would we have to put them into the backyard, or it just there is some complications to enacting that type of an ordinance.
Yeah, and those are issues that we can talk about. Maybe little designated smoking areas could be an idea. I'm not sure on where they would be placed. Mm-hmm. But I can look into that more, and maybe someone else can help me discuss, and maybe we can talk about other areas designated.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Kurt,
Yeah, just to follow up on what Eric was saying, I mean, I see those people in front of the Harbor Bar. There isn't 20 feet between the entrance of Harbor Bar and the liquor store. So, you know, all they seem to do is just kind of move down away from the door, and then, you know, at what point along that whole stretch are they going to be able to stand? I mean,
yeah, unfortunately, that for the smokers, it would be pretty much the entire downtown would be a no-smoking zone. Mm-hmm. It would help out during when we have our big city activities like 4th of July or parades. When there's many people downtown and there's tons of children and everyone's just out there smoking. I mean, there's so many people affected by the secondhand smoke. So if there was, like, say if we were to have designated smoking areas, it would at least get the people off the main drag and hopefully to a safe place where they can be able to smoke their cigarettes.
Yeah, any other comments or questions?
No. Just a quick comment. I've talked to Larry before, and you know, that owns a Harbor Bar, and he did not prefer them to be, you know, down the alleyway in the back in the parking lot, you know, to smoke. And that seemed to me that would be the only alternative if we pushed through something like this. But I really do think, though, I appreciate the idea of making it smoke-free, and that's something I'll look into, too, and see if we can't adjust the, you know,
okay, or even just widening it just a little bit further, even if 20 feet's too much. I know Anchorage, they have a reasonable distance. Of certain locations is 20 feet. They also have all areas. Smoking is prohibited all areas of 50 feet within entrances of hospitals and medical clinic, and 20 feet from all properties owned by the any of the city council areas. So if we were able to make it wider by areas where it's really needed.
So do you have a comment?
I was just going to say, Katie, I actually was interested in sponsoring your ordinance, but then the 20 feet was really what threw me for a loop. It's a legal activity, even though I don't like smoking and mm-hmm. I'm not a smoker, and I completely agree. I feel like I have to step way around people to get around it walking downtown, but I think we need to figure out how to deal with that illegal activity before we start saying you can't do this and you can't do that. Okay. Because we've got tiny little businesses that are really, their front doors are close together. And somehow we have to figure that out. If you wanted to separate out the electronic smoking and just deal with that now and work on the other issue, that's something I think we all would be willing to move forward with.
That'd be great.
I know this discussion about distance came up when we drafted this ordinance, and I'm glad we did. It's nice to be able to go into an establishment and not breathe other people's smoke. And the discussion did come up that, well, it's just going to put them out on the sidewalk. And that's exactly what it did. So how much farther do you restrict people in their, you know, freedom of rights or whatever you want to call it, to be able to smoke, you know, without shoving them back in an alley? But, you know, I agree, secondhand smoke is not a good thing.
I think we also have to add to that the employees, whether it be at the hospital or so forth, who do smoke and who have a designated place, you know, outside, and our borough employees also, who needs to be designated places. Is it reasonable, you know, to send them out 100 feet and mm-hmm. so forth? I think that needs to be part of it, too.
And it will all come with an expense to either the business owners or somebody that have to supply that, so we got to keep that in mind as well, I think. But, you know, talking about the hospital, you know, going by on 2nd Street, you see some elderly folks that smoke, and they're sitting in their wheelchairs underneath the covered area by the doors. So, I mean,
which may not be 20 feet from their door.
It might not be, but, you know,
that's their designated area.
I feel pretty bad making someone wheel their chair out in the middle of the street to have a cigarette if that's their habit. But anyway, we'll probably, thanks for your input and your concern. We'll address it.
Okay.
Any other views today unrelated to items on the agenda? Okay, seeing none. That takes us to board, commission, and committee reports, and there is none under that item. Consent agenda, no items there. Report of other officers, that's the only one today is the mayor's report. Before I get started, does anybody feel like we need a break?
Let's do it.
Okay. 5 minutes.
Hey, good afternoon. Aloha, Winala. We're being preempted by something much more entertaining today, the Borough Council meeting, Borough Assembly meeting. But I wanted to break in here and give you some important information. I'm Chuck Rose, of course, your volunteer host for Monday Afternoon Street Beat, which we're not beating the street today. Instead, we're listening to the Borough Assembly meeting. But I wanted to let everybody know that the jet report, flight number 64, is supposed to be on time. We can expect it to land at 2:28 this afternoon and then depart at 3:20. Also, before the council comes back, let's go ahead and run through the local weather report for Petersburg, Kuprinoff, Wrangell, and Cake. Today, rain developing in the morning, highs around 45, east wind 15 to 25 miles per hour. Tonight, rain, lows around 39, south wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tuesday, cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 44, east wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tuesday night, cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 37, southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Wednesday, rain likely, highs around 43, southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 37. Thursday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 44. Thursday night, cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 37. Friday, rain likely, highs around 44. Friday night, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 37. Saturday, cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 45. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 37. And Sunday, if we can actually see that far ahead, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 43. There we go. Low tide at 6:18 p.m. this evening at 1.9. Our high tide was at 11:47 a.m. at 17.6 feet. Sunset should be at 5:37 p.m. this evening. I'm going to put a little bit more music on. Until the Borough Assembly folks come back. Okay. This is Hapa, Olinda Road. Thank you. Well, I don't know if we have time for any more music, but I'm going to go ahead and put something on, and we'll play it as long as we can until the Borough Assembly comes back from their break. This one is, who is this from? I don't even know. Danca Mimi Criolla from the Cape Verde Islands by Tito Paris.
Danza mami criolla, colada en mí, piensa en la pasada vida, mi coladera. Danza mami criolla, colada en mí, piensa en la pasada vida, mi coladera. Sabura y elana, nos deja cabufeti, la nota sin ti, na mei, nos felizón. Dança mami criola, cola na mim, pensa na passada, no coladeira. Dança mami criola, cola na mim, pensa na passada, no coladeira.
Okay, it sounds like the Borough Assembly is coming back, so we're going to get into their meeting right now.
Was mentioned earlier, we are seeking letters of interest. The Borough is seeking letters of interest from Borough residents willing to serve on the following boards, commissions until October 2016, the municipal election. There's two seats on the hospital board and one on the planning commission, so put your name in the hat and join the fun. Municipal building police department renovation project. Four bids were received for the renovation of the municipal building police department. The apparent low bidder is MCG Constructors Incorporated, DCI Joint Venture, for a total bid of $6,852,300. Base bid of $6,307,000 plus four alternates, and we'll discuss that. We're having a special meeting Friday the 11th at noon to talk about the approval or non-approval of the moving forward with the bid. So that was good news. It did come in lower. There's a few ways we could, you know, maybe not add all the alternates, but we'll discuss that later. Senate Finance Committee public hearing on the state's proposed fiscal year 2017 operating budget. There's a teleconference call in tomorrow to the Senate Finance Committee, and they'll hear public testimony from Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg between 1 and 2 o'clock. If the Assembly wants us to take a formal position as an Assembly for the borough, I'm available to be there to testify during that time. So if I get some direction as to what we'd want to talk about, revenue sharing, PERS, or whatever the topics are, maybe after I'm done with my report, we can come up with some speaking points. Another item, the Central Air Service, our federal lobbyists have brought to our attention legislation reauthorizing the FAA that could have negative impacts to rural community air service in Alaska. They're monitoring the progress of the legislation and will keep us informed. We may have to write a resolution to make our concerns heard at some point, and I intend to bring this discussion up with other Southeast mayors next week at the Southeast Conference. I've talked to a few of them on the phone, and they're concerned as well. And a member of Lagadakis feels strongly about drafting a resolution to make a comment, and I think we should. Our lobbyists, like I said, are keeping an eye on it, so, but we don't want to get caught behind the curve on that one. Mayfest invitations. We've sent out invitations to our 2016 Little Norway Festival. Have sent invitations to the governor, lieutenant governor, Senators Murkowski, Sullivan, and Stedman, Congressman Young, Representative Christ Tompkins, and Sam Keto, Alaska Department of Corrections Commissioner Williams, U.S. Coast Guard Rear Admiral Abel. He's the commander of the 17th U.S. District out of Juneau. And His Royal Highness King Harald V from Norway. So a couple of them have expressed interest. I know the governor, lieutenant governor, want to return. Senator Murkowski said she can't make it. Christ Tompkins has already said he'll be here. I'm assuming Senator Stedman will be here as well. So maybe we'll have some visitors. Another note, I will be gone for the next meeting, the 21st, but I should be back for the April 4th meeting. It just depends on what happens with the hearing. Maybe Matt will let me go home early from down there, hearing pounding. But, so what would we like to say tomorrow in the public testimony?
This had nothing to do with public testimony, Mark. I just wanted to also reiterate that I'm going to be gone on the hearing too, and so I'm
okay, so you'll miss the next meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. And
that makes three of us, because I'm on a plane that day, as I mentioned last time.
Right.
The birth of our child.
So if everybody else will be here, we'll have a quorum, and I should be able to call in unless we're actively involved in the fishery.
Yeah. You know, I'll do my best to call in.
Okay. So, okay. We have that squared away. Any idea on testimony tomorrow? What should the talking points be? I mean, I know it's like, we know there's going to be cuts. So
right.
We need the school funding, PERS.
Yeah, I think revenue sharing has to be on there as a major item for us.
Because if we keep notes,
I am.
Thank you.
Because if we get that, if that's reduced, that's significant dollars, as we all know, to our community here. That would be one of my, that'd be my kind of my first one. My second one then would be is that I'd like to see us maintain, you know, not have to increase the PERS, our PERS funding. In other words, keep it where it was.
Keep
the same
it at 22%.
Yes,
and I think that's going to be the position from Southeast Conference and AML, but we, you know, let's see where it goes.
Right. Yeah, that's, I think that one has a chance of losing. I think the revenue sharing may have a chance, better chance to holding, but the other one I think is going to be lost somewhat. And the school funding, I think we need to push to is number three.
Okay. Kurt?
One of the things I was thinking about was, you know, I'm not even sure where it falls into, but you know, the funding for our police department here for, you know, making sure that we can, you know, stop the drugs from coming into the community. You know, I mean, to me, we're ignoring public safety by allowing, you know, heroin and methamphetamine come into our community here. And if we keep cutting those budgets from them, manpower is going to be less. The court systems aren't even going to try some of these trials, you know, so you know, I think that's a huge concern for our community.
Okay. Eric or Nancy or Jay, any comments?
Bob was all over it.
Okay, perfect.
I think it does help to have some specifics, because already there are some things happening that I think the state didn't intend. I ran into Allison Sartori again, the probation officer, the itinerant probation officer, and her department, she's funded out of Health and Social Services, whose budget is facing cuts, and they were told no travel. Well, her job involves travel. And they didn't anticipate that she would interpret that they meant her, and she thought she was being fired. So there are some things that the legislature calls they may make that have some unintended consequences. So we need to have some specifics about not just that we want revenue sharing, but if we don't get it, this and this.
Well,
and this.
That's where I was going with that. The implications of not having that funding is where I was at.
Right. I think another thing we might want to touch on is asking the legislature not to take any bigger percentage of the raw fish tax. It's a 50-50 now, and there's been, you know, I don't know what the talk is up there amongst themselves, but it's all being discussed. So, okay, Debbie's making a list, so I'll be there early tomorrow and sign up for testifying. Okay, that's...
Mark, can we go back to the Essential Air Services part of that
for
just a second? Mm-hmm. Having worked back there in Washington for a few years, it would be very helpful, I think, if we had a letter from the mayor, first of all, that would go back to the chairman of the committee, that would essentially talk not to a resolution per se, but the effects on our communities here. I'm talking about the details, what really affects, what effects that would have on our community. But then also, if you, in when I was on the AML Policy Committee, that was one of the things we talked about, because it affects every one of the interior communities too, the same issue. And that would be helpful, because they're up here at this level. What we need to be able to do also is to talk to the details of what affects, you know, because we can, you know, from our perspective. And I think it'd be very helpful if we had a letter that went to the chairman to
okay,
that.
Well,
nothing, I don't believe, because this is a lame duck session. Nothing's going to happen this year. But it would certainly be good to have it on record back there of what effects it would have.
Okay.
And that was my feeling as well, okay. Is that get ahead of the curve on that one before it gets too much traction.
The one thing we could add in that letter is just the reduction of our ferry service. We're selling one ferry and two more are going to be mothballed, and Alaska Airlines sells all their combis. What are we going to be actually flying in and out of here on? And
right.
Well, and the other potential issue that came up at AML of the state divesting airports as well.
Yes.
We could have a real triple whammy if all came to pass.
Yes.
Right. So, okay, we'll get a letter off to that effect. Is that all?
No.
Okay. So, we don't have a manager's report today. Unfinished business. Ordinances for second reading.
And actually, there is one other thing, and that is public radio, which we all talked about before, but we didn't add to our list.
Yeah, that's a shame to see they're talking about eliminating that funding 100%. Okay, ordinances for second reading, ordinance 2016-02, an ordinance adopting the comprehensive plan dated February 22nd, 2016 for the Petersburg Borough. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its second reading.
So move.
Second. Okay, it's been moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Walhooter, I believe, to adopt ordinance 2016-12. And as we realize, we had eight or nine letters, and many public speakers today concerned about the zoning issue being that, even if it is just, you know, we adopt the ordinance to approve this comprehensive plan, it's just a guideline. But, I mean, I can kind of see people's concerns about, you know, more harsh overreach being involved.
Yeah.
Okay, discussion?
Yeah, Bob? Mr. Mayor, I'd like to, after I've heard all this, I'd like to make a proposal that we add an amendment into that plan. And here's my proposed amendment. Any proposals to implement a land use code for areas outside of Service Area 1 should include an advisory vote of those people affected.
Okay, so that you're going to make...
I put it in the form of a motion, yes.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, that amendment has been moved by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Walhooter, so we will have discussion on that. Having it so there would be an advisory vote of the people outside of Service Area 1 if there was to be any zoning, planning and zoning imposed on him? Is that basically what you said?
Yes. Okay. Well, if there's a proposal either by us or by
whoever it comes
yes,
from.
Exactly. And again, that's in comprehensive plan, and this is, you know, one of the items in there. It's not it's not saying you absolutely have to do it, but, you know, I think it'd be reasonable to do.
Okay. Nancy, did you have your hand up?
It seemed to me like a lot of those comments were driven totally by emotion, and they had a misconception about what it was pushing for. I'm not aware that they mean to start planning and zoning immediately, and nobody will have any input.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think this would just be another layer of, make them feel that we're going to give them every chance they can to speak. You know, if they have an advisory vote and we get a vote from the people outside of Service Area 1, I don't see what would hurt anything. That's my opinion.
What would a special or an advisory vote entail? Would this be, would we be setting up like a separate district? Would we be, in essence, creating a Service Area 1 versus all other?
That wasn't my intent. My intent was, and yes, you could have it by, you know, and I'm not sure where it would go. Or you could have it just for Midcoff, you could have it. You don't have to set up a service area to do it. If they plan to put, you know, if we had plans, for instance, to put to put zoning out there of some sort, then it would just be advisory vote of those people out there, and that could be tracked, as Debbie told me, it'd be tracked, you know, separately in a vote if we were, you know, with no problem at all, okay, because we have the records.
Jay, I'm going to bring it back to you, Nancy. Jay?
All right. A couple thoughts. One, just I guess, point of clarification. An advisory vote, just had an advisory vote, and we as an assembly, of course, would do take action however we did, right? Just an advisory.
That's correct.
Okay. I guess my thought with that is, at face value, I find it unnecessary. I think a lot of the comments today were patently false. I see no planet on which we live where people would be helicoptering in to enforce zoning in some random place. I think it's ludicrous, unfathomable, and I think it shows a lack of education from some members in the community who have just heard this recently and decided to pounce on it. I've lived rurally most of my life. I've had running water for the last 5 years. Feels pretty good. I don't want anybody messing with what's going on in my backyard. Live and let live. I don't see anything in this comprehensive plan that is meant to be intrusive on people's individual property rights. I don't see it. And I've tried to really put on a critical eye and look for it. That being said, I don't see any harm in what Member Lynn is planning right now. I think that is can't do any harm. I'll definitely be supporting that.
Kurt.
I mentioned earlier, just off the record, that whether planning and zoning is in the comprehensive plan or not, if we as assembly decide that we need to do some zoning out there, we would still have to go through the same process of, you know, making it so. We'd have to get, you know, some input from them. We'd have to. So just because it's in the comprehensive plan does not make it so. And so this is just simply a dream, you know, that when people finally wake up, they're going to realize it was just a dream that this planning and zoning was in the comprehensive plan. And it means absolutely nothing but a guideline that we could someday look towards, you know, to use as, you know, a template on how we could go about it. But not without their support, you know. I mean, we'd be foolish to try to impose something on these people that live outside the area without getting their support. So, to me, I'm going to vote for, and when I like Bob's resolution, because it should, you know, parlay a little bit of the fears, you know, but I think the comprehensive plan was already implying exactly what he said, but now this is in writing.
Correct.
So, anyway.
Okay, thanks. Cindy, and then Nancy.
I don't know whether it's completely different or a friendly amendment to yours, Bob. I would offer that we put a line into the comprehensive plan saying we would not establish zoning in an area until a service area was established. And establishing a service area requires those residents going through the process of doing that themselves. So there would be some public input and some public discussion before we ever got to the zoning part. I'm a little worried about having an advisory vote because we already have a planning and zoning process that calls for public meetings. So then we're adding something outside of that. But I think if we stipulated that an area had to be formed into a service area before zones were implemented, that might solve the problem.
In the charter, in the section, I don't even know which section, it's 11 of it, I believe it is, that talks about establishing service areas. We do not have to establish service areas. You could have that all service area one, and there's two ways you could do it. This group could establish a service area one, mm-hmm. or the people, let's say, out at Papkes could come together and form a service area. And that's one of the things we haven't addressed, you know, that whether or not we want even service areas, that type of thing. When I was on the Charter Committee, and Nancy can correct me if I'm wrong, but we looked at quite a number of different ways to establish service areas. And we tried to come up with a set of criteria that I remember. And we couldn't agree, the group could not agree on, you know, what that criteria was. You know, it was all over the board, so to speak. So that's why it's open-ended. And so all I'm going back to is that I hesitate saying service area, you know, has to be a service area first, because you could actually blanket the whole area, you know, blanket the whole area with planning and zoning if you wanted to, or you could do it by service area, and that's the choice. That's the way the charter reads, as I interpret it. And so I just kind of left it open-ended, so to speak. That's where I was at.
I guess the only thing there is that the borough has not taken the position that they want to impose service areas on outlying areas. They're leaving it up to the residents of outlying areas to form their own service areas.
Yeah, and that's in two. What I'm trying to do is, you know, we need to make sure we develop some credibility is not the right word, but maybe it is, you know, with those folks outside. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, that's what my objective is here.
Alleviate some fears.
Yes.
Nancy, do you want
to? Didn't someone mention there wouldn't be any zoning or planning or until it was a service area?
I asked the question, and it wasn't straightforward.
Mm. Well, whatever we vote on right now, we need to make sure they're educated, because as I said and as Jay pointed out, their comments were mostly driven by emotion, and they were misinformed or misinterpreting. So we need to make sure they know what it means, what we're saying.
Which happens a lot in situations like this. But yeah, we need to try to make it as clear as we can, and there has been lots of public input in this whole process. Kurt?
This would be my last comment. I hope they never want to go to planning and zoning out there, because it would be a net loss to us. You know, it's minimal amount of money they're asked for the electrical permits and the building permits and to pay another employee to, first of all, find him a skiff that's reliable enough to go down to or drop him in with a helicopter. It's a net loss. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed that they never want us to go out there and do anything. So that's just my final opinion.
I see Bob's idea of an advisory board a good idea, but one thing that might come along with that, and Debbie might be able to answer this, if that's considered some kind of a special election or something, or a special, what are the fees associated with that? Would there be any here?
Of course there would be.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There would definitely be a cost.
So you have to provide a ballot.
Yes.
Count the numbers. Has to be done in a certifiable way.
First off, of course, we have a list of voters, you know, this thick in our borough. Mm-hmm. So we'd have to, Mindy and I would have to go through and separate service area one voters and other. And then, of course, we'd have to print up a ballot. We'd have to basically hold some kind of maybe not a special election, but that I would have to find out from the attorney. Mm-hmm. Can we call it something other than a special election? I'm not sure. It's just an advisory vote, so it doesn't make things, you know, solidified, whatever is chosen. So maybe it's not a special election, but it would definitely be time, and it would cost money. Mm-hmm. No doubt about that.
Okay. Yeah. Just go ahead, Bob.
Okay, keep in mind, I said should, not you have to, you know.
Right. Well, and this is only the second reading of this, so, I mean, I think this discussion we're having right now is showing the people that were concerned that came to the meeting today that we're going to slam planning and zoning on them. If they're listening to this discussion, I hope they would take away from it that isn't, well, it's not my direction, you know. So, I mean, it's just stay informed and keep involved in the process.
So,
Jay?
No.
So if a vote like this at their request was held, would Service Area 1 have to pay for it, or would they be responsible for the cost?
You know, that's probably a whole other can of worms.
Well, good question.
Yeah, good question, okay.
Perhaps the amendment should say that.
To go back to some of the public testimony, I think it was Harold Madalyn who said, we had formed a comprehensive plan before, and then people put it away and forgot mm-hmm. it. And in some ways, that's the answer. We had some direction before, and not all of it got implemented. Not all of this is going to get cast into ordinances. It's just a roadmap. You can take the exit before the one you plan to go on if it looks like that's where you want to go. It's just an idea of where we want our community to head.
So not knowing the ramifications of changing this wording, and if we were to be asked to actually have this advisory vote and it did cost something, would it be a good idea to not amend it? Or does Bob still feel like he wants to amend it? we could add the language in there, but in a sense, they can still, people interested in this could still come to the third reading of this ordinance, and it won't be a public hearing, but they could speak in visitors' views related to the agenda, and and then we could proceed from there. If we still think we want this wording change, how do you feel about that, Bob?
Well, I was asking it to be put in there, if you're making the same point I am. I asked for the wording to be put into the plan and saying that if you're going outside service area one, there's four pages back here in the plan that talks about all kinds of planning and zoning that could be put out there, not saying they would. And all this would be is an added statement in there that says if we get to the point that, that what people are asking for it and so forth, there's a chance, you can or you don't have to. The reason I had it, it should. So I guess I'm going to have to leave my motion stand.
Okay, it doesn't hurt anything. I'm just trying to get the whole conversation. So, Kurt?
Can I ask one question to Liz?
Sure.
Liz, when they came down from Anchorage to put together this comprehensive plan, who made the suggestion that we put planning and zoning outside of service area one into here? Because I want people to know that I had nothing to do with this, because I'm not looking to generate money, so I just wondered, how did it get put in there?
So they had conversations with a lot of people in town, and they went out and had meetings out at the trees, especially to talk to folks out at Papke's. And what I heard back from them was that there wasn't necessarily this big push to have zoning outside of service area one, but what they quietly heard from individuals was, I've just built a really nice house out at Mitkoff Highway. Now I'm a little bit concerned because the neighbor properties, all the trees are coming down, and I really don't know what they're going to do there. And there was sort of this uncertainty about what could occur in neighboring properties. And so they came back and said, look, if you want to see people willing to spend money and develop properties outside of service area one, you need to be able to give them something that protects their property values. So that's where it came from.
And the way you worded that, Bob, I think about it again. I don't see anything wrong with it, because we're not saying that it has to happen. And
it's
just as zoning is going to be a topic of
And then the assembly could choose, they could or they don't have to,
Okay.
The way I see it.
Kurt?
I mean, that's the same process that we would have gone through anyway.
Right.
So now that it's in wording, it clarifies it.
Okay. Is there any more discussion on the amendment to modify the... Okay, will the clerk call the roll on the amendment?
Yes. Eric?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
No.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Cindy?
No.
Okay, we have voted 5-2 to add that wording into the comprehensive plan. Now we'll go back to the main motion and adopting ordinance 2016-02 in its second reading. Any more discussion on that? Clerk, call the roll.
Mark.
Yes.
Bob.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
Eric.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Jay.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, ordinance 2016-02 passes unanimously as amended. That brings us to new business. Now we're going to talk about dogs and stuff. Ordinance 2016-03, an ordinance providing for Chapter 7.04 of the Borough Code. We'll entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its first reading.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Been moved by Member Greger, seconded by Member Walhuter to adopt Ordinance 2016-03 in its first reading. Any discussion? Cindy?
Yeah, I looked into the section on service dogs, and unfortunately, there is nothing that really that there are no specific requirements for training or certification for service dogs. It's even when you look at Americans for Disabilities Act, I think we're creating some ordinances that really are not, You can offer a perspective, Kelly, but I don't think there's anything enforceable there. I think if somebody says a dog, I've trained my dog, it's a service dog, and a vet says it's a service dog, whether it really is or not.
Do you have any comments, Kelly, Chief?
You know, I guess I may have made an incorrect assumption, and you know what they say about that. I assume that there was some sort of formal designation somewhere, and we were trying to, be cognizant to the needs of the folks that had the service dogs or service animals. So, yeah, I just assumed that there was some sort of official designation or recommendation.
The Americans with Disabilities Act speaks to service dogs, but I don't think that there's any specific organization that does the certification, and I don't think there's any set of requirements. There's some language about emotional support dogs being treated differently than service dogs, but it's all kind of fuzzy. And I guess I'd like to see something that was really clear so that you had something you could tie to, and I'm not sure that we've captured it here with this language.
So what I'm hearing is you want us to try to come up with a something definition or designation?
Yeah, I think that would be better.
Okay.
And this is just the first reading of this ordinance, so we can address it at the next one or the... any other comments, Bob?
Yes. The section on vaccination of dogs in there, it essentially says that all dogs in the borough are in the service area one would have to be vaccinated, and I agree with that. But if you go back to where you have the license requirements in that section, there's nothing in there that says when somebody comes forward to get a license for their dog, that they have to present a certificate, that where they've had their dog vaccinated, that I can see, Kelly.
Okay.
So add that.
Yes, I'm suggesting
that.
We add that. And then what happens if somebody refuses to have it vaccinated? That's the other side of that coin. And you address folks vaccinating animals. But now what happens if they absolutely refuse? Is that, I don't know, I'm just asking. Rhetorical question, maybe, but...
Then they probably can't get a license for their dog, and they might get a fine underneath the next ordinance we're going to talk about. I don't know. Nancy?
I'm curious to know how many licensed dogs there are presently in town, or in the borough.
Good point.
I would have to check on that. The last count, I remember hearing, was just over 100. That's from memory off the top of my head.
Just over 100?
Just over 100.
A little anecdote here. Several years ago, I had a home client who had a little dog that started to go blind. And I said, perhaps we should get a tag for this dog in case she wanders off. And I went down to buy a tag. Now, keep in mind, this was late fall, and Maggie's tag number was 9. Number 9. There were 9 dogs in the borough, in the city.
That were licensed.
According to the requirement that all dogs be licensed, Maggie was number 9.
Cindy?
There was one other thing I saw in this ordinance, and that is on page 5, item F, says to own, harbor, or keep under their control a dangerous dog without having conspicuously posted and easily read beware of dangerous dog sign. Then in the other ordinance under fines, I think for owning a dangerous dog, there's a fine. So we've got some conflict there.
Nancy?
It's also my understanding that if you have a sign that says beware of dog, it's marking you for liability in court because you knew your dog was dangerous, and yet there he was. And if you don't have the sign up, they can't. Apparently, you're not as liable.
The dangerous dog status is something that has to be determined by the assembly or by the board, if there's a board in effect. The fine is for a failure to post the sign. unless I'm seeing something.
I thought there were two fines, one for having a dangerous dog and one for posting the sign.
Failure to post the sign and failure to confine. Once the designation is made that a dog is dangerous, it has to be confined, and,
okay.
And folks have to take steps to not allow the dog to injure someone.
Okay.
So those are the two things. If I could just jump in real quick.
Sure.
Bob, if I could ask you to look at 7480 under the vaccination, does that not meet your need for licensing? It's on page 4, about two-thirds of the way down. It says no license shall be granted for a dog 6 months of age or older which has not been vaccinated against rabies.
Yeah, and I'm okay with what you had there, except that it doesn't say in here any place. If I come in for a license, let's say for my dog,
mm-hmm.
and you, there's nothing here that says that I have to present you with a certificate. You know, you can say, do you have a certificate? Yes. I'm just saying is that all I'm saying is that you need to say up front that, you know, when I come in for a license, I need to show you a certificate to assure that there is a. That's all I'm asking.
Okay, so we'll add the certificate to this section.
Yeah, that's what
okay.
I'm asking for.
Remember, Lynn, to clarify, like similar to a health certificate if you're getting on the ferry, for instance.
Exactly.
Yeah, got it.
Okay, so any more discussion on ordinance 2016-03? So it sounds like we're going to change some wording between now and the next time, so.
Let me ask one more time. So I'm looking at the ordinance for the fines, and what it says is possession of a vicious dog, $500 fine. And so to me, it seems like there's a conflict between the two ordinances. If somebody self-identifies their dog as a dangerous dog, then they're saying, fine me $500.
All right, so where were you looking?
On page 3.
Right.
7.04.090D.
That's of the next ordinance?
Mm-hmm.
A vicious dog versus dangerous dog, they're two different classifications, and that's, again, something that would have to be made by an animal control board or the assembly if, board is not there. So a vicious dog would be, in effect, more dangerous than a dangerous dog.
Can we add that definition to the ordinance we're considering right now so that the public is aware that there's a distinction?
Vicious dog is defined at page 3 down near the bottom.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's in there.
It's hard to flip back and forth.
Yeah, that's, we should probably address one ordinance at a time, but I can see where if you don't want to pass one, then pass another one with conflicting messages. So, sounds like, is there any more discussion on this ordinance? Ordinance 2016-03, as we've changed, we should have actually been making amendments and motions and addressing all those as we go, but sounds, first reading, we'll change some wording for the second reading and public hearing. Any other discussion on this? Clerk, call the roll.
Eric?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes. Okay, ordinance 2016-03 passes unanimously in its first reading. And our next ordinance up for discussion is an ordinance providing for fines in section 1.16.030, fine schedules for violations of chapter 7.04, dogs. I'd entertain a motion to adopt resolution or this ordinance 2016-04 in its first reading.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Greger, seconded by Member Lynn to adopt ordinance 2016-04. Discussion? So we're talking about earlier a little different, but vicious and dangerous dogs. So are your concerns addressed?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Kelly.
Okay. Nancy?
I have a question. Is there some way we can define littering or define that cigarette butts are littering?
Does that have anything to do with this ordinance?
Yep.
Where is that?
Well, I don't. Can we define littering?
Probably. I don't know if we can address it under this ordinance.
It should be defined.
Is it defined?
Where is it defined?
It's not in the dog ordinance. It's in the sanitation ordinance. Is that Title 14?
In Ordinance 2016-04?
No.
I believe that's Title 14, sanitation.
That's the ones we're dealing with?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's just under.
May I ask why the increases in rates over the initial $10 offense and then moving into 25 and then kind of sequentially getting higher?
I don't believe they've been updated in quite a while, and there is no user-friendly way to track convictions of municipal ordinance violations. So for me to charge a graduated amount, I would have to prove that there was a prior conviction of that offense. So what we tried to do was try to pick some middle ground that would still have a punitive effect and also have a deterrence effect or an effective deterrence somewhere in there that we didn't have to try to track these convictions. When someone gets a traffic ticket, the court enters that conviction, if they're convicted, into their system, which filters down into DMV's record management system that filters down into the public safety information network. So there is a mechanism there to track those sorts of violations, but not municipal ordinance violations.
Thank you.
Okay, can I answer your question? Any other discussion on Ordinance 2016-04? Will clerk call the roll?
Bob?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Art?
Yes. Okay, resolution ordinance 2016-04 passes unanimously. Should have eaten lunch before I came. It's getting late. No. Now that brings us to resolution 2016-07, a resolution approving the license use and maintenance of the Mort Fryer ball fields to the Petersburg Little League. So I'd entertain a motion to adopt that resolution.
I so move.
Second.
Okay, moved by Member Loganakis, seconded by Member Walhooter to adopt resolution 2016-07. Discussion? Okay, looks any no discussion? Kurt?
I got a question for Dwayne. Are you involved in that, Dwayne? Can you come up and give us your opinion on that and what you think? You guys, are you interested in it?
Are we?
Or even Matt?
Yeah, Matt and I, and yeah.
Have they approved it?
Okay.
It went to the board. We've been working on it for quite. Anyway, my name is Dwayne Bell. I am the district administrator for Southeast Alaska Little League. Also, I'm the liaison between the local Little League and Little League Baseball Incorporated. We've been working on this since Donnie came to us to come to an agreement to take it over maintenance-wise and scheduling and all that kind of stuff. And so we've been working on a long time trying to figure out financially for us. Little League is a nonprofit organization. We go out and raise funds. I think today we were the only ones that are coming to you that actually is reducing your cost. So, you know, we're trying to keep our program and also help the borough because we know how things are coming down the pike. So, you know, there's some things in there that, you know, we don't, you know, long term, we just want to have the abilities to come back to you guys and talk more, and that's why some of the language that we put in there. But we think it's a viable agreement. We think we could do this. We think our program's very important, you know, to our well-being of our community. And it also economic-wise does affect our community if we didn't have Little League Baseball here. An example is I assign tournaments to local communities in Southeast. This year I'm probably going to assign two of them, a 9- and 10-year-old tournament and an 11- and 12-year-old tournament. So there's going to be approximately, you know, in one of the tournaments, 100 kids that come in. Parents, they'd spend money in both tournaments. So we could have a 200 or 300 people coming in July spending money throughout our community. So it does have an economic base, you know. And other communities in the Southeast fight for these 5, 6, 7 tournaments that I put on every year through Little League. And so it's very important to us, and we want to go forward with it, you know. This is all new to us, doing this. So our goal was to have a partnership with the borough, so that, because it is important, you know, we don't know down the road if something happens that we can't financially afford to repair things. And you can see some of the wording in there that kind of gives us options to come back and talk to you folks about things, and hopefully, you know, work it out to where we can keep this program going and keep that facility open, because it is important.
Okay. Thank you, Dwayne. Any questions? Or
I just wish we had a consolation prize for coming up and asking us for no money, but actually taking responsibility from us. But you'll just have to accept my heartfelt thank you.
Well, if you read that close enough, that's not necessarily the case. There is some things in there that there is money, you know. Yeah. But it, considering what has been spent, you know, Little League's always... What we do up there is phenomenal, in my view. I just got back today off the morning jet, having meetings in Ketchikan and Sitka, Little League meetings, and we did road shows. We had people from Little League Baseball come in and teach our local leagues, Little League one-on-one, hometown Little League, how to operate Little Leagues and things like that. And so I'm listening to Ketchikan, Sitka's, Junos, and seeing the issues that they have. We have a pretty good working relationship with the borough compared to what they have, and we want to continue that. And it's economic-wise, it's going to help us. It's going to help bring money in. And right now we're talking, because Petersburg is so central, there's some talk out there that if at some point that Petersburg could handle it, we'd like to have all the tournaments in Petersburg, and that's about seven of them, and that's pretty big. We're currently, just a little update, currently we're putting on an umpire school here, which is first time in Alaska, and it's happening here in Petersburg. April 1st, 2nd, 3rd, typically Western Region in San Bernardino puts on a school every year, one, and it holds 60 students. And we try to get guys, we pay for this cost for sending guys to these schools. We just had our local dentist, Jay, go through the school. It's a great opportunity, but we couldn't get any more through the school because it was overloaded. The waiting lists are huge. So we were in Seattle. I was in Seattle 2 weeks ago, and again, more Little League meetings, and we come up with this brainstorm to have one here in Petersburg, and we're doing it. And right now, so far, we got 15 students that are coming in from all over Southeast. We're bringing three instructors from Oregon and California. The guys have umpired at the World Series level. That's pretty cool. I mean, to get that caliber of guys in here to teach Southeast Alaska umpires, and to enhance the Little League program. And that's what it does. It makes a better program for the kids. It's just a win-win situation. If this thing turns out, our goal is to do this every year here in Petersburg. Again, we're so central, and it's so much easier for everybody to get here that all the leagues in Southeast feel like that's the direction that we want to go. But it has to be a partnership because with the borough, because we can't do it on our own. So,
well, thanks for your desire to help.
Have you checked with the chamber or not? I mean, it'd be a great time to like throw a big like barbecue bash or something at Sandy Beach or something, just to let them know that we really appreciate them coming to this community, and you know, that food seems to entice people.
Right. What right now, unfortunately, on the district staff, which is that does a lot of this stuff, it's me and one other person. That's only two staff members, so we don't have a lot of opportunities to do things that like that. Mm-hmm. We're trying, you know. Yeah, I mean, you know, we'd love to have the chamber involved, and I've talked to a couple of them about it, and I think we'd get support there. And we try not to go to, and we try to be self-efficient, and so that way when we do need, it's easier to get. So,
thanks for your help.
Great job.
Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion on resolution 2016-07? Clerk, call the roll.
Bob?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Kirk? Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, resolution 2016-07 passes unanimously. Next resolution on the agenda is 2016-08, a resolution authorizing and directing the municipal land selection agent to transmit to the Alaska Department of Natural Resources a portion of the borough's nomination of municipal entitlement lands. I entertain a motion to adopt this resolution.
I so move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Moved by Member Loganakis, seconded by Member Greger to adopt resolution 2016-08. So, and I believe the Land Selections Committee just had a meeting this morning, and Liz has updated information if anybody needs it. So I don't know what came out of the meeting today, but any other discussion, ideas on this?
I'll let Liz talk first anymore.
Well, they did meet, and we went through the list one more time, and they recommend the list as is, as it was presented to you for selection.
One thing, and you guys have probably been reading the same emails, that Liz has been working with Randy Rarrell from Senator Stedman's office in DNR, and come to find out that some of the land in the borough over in Thomas Bay in particular was 2,000 acres, I believe, Liz, that wasn't put in the mix, so that if that's the case, if we get 10% of that, it'd be another 200 acres, but we'll cross that bridge when we go there. And but Liz and I are going to be in DNR's office, going to meet with Randy Marrero and our lobbyist on Monday, and then we're going to meet with DNR, I believe, on the 16th, so to give them this list and see what they have to say. Okay. Any other discussion?
Oh, I was just going to talk about where the Lands Committee was coming from, and I've been through the list with them, is that they had kind of three criteria here. Is one is the lands that we could sell, make a profit, and put back into onto the tax list. The second one is they were looking for access for to what I'll call terminal transportation facilities, but anyhow, access to the island and to the other islands that we're going to need for the future. And in this list, they have both Woodpecker and Olson's in the list in the first go-around. And then they looked at, there was questions, as Liz talked about earlier, the Thomas Bay subdivision and what you might want to do, and they chose to leave that one. That area, that's an area of a land of quite a chunk of land that's already been subdivided by DNR, and it's already done. And so, but they chose to leave that one for the second go-around for the... And then let me just add one other thing, Liz. And then the third one was, there was quite a discussion on mitigation lands. And I think Liz sent out the notes on what you learned from the Corps of Engineers. But the group decided to leave that mitigation lands for the second go-around because we need to have a strategy. Essentially, what it amounts to is those mitigation lands need to be, one, wetlands, designated wetlands, two, and they need to be such that they could literally be set aside with no other encumbrances. And if we chose lands, since we don't get the subsurface rights, if we chose those lands, then we would be responsible to do any kind of mineral survey prior to the time that the Corps would accept them. Depends, and it gets very complicated there. So all I'm saying is that their cost to the borough could be very high, you know, up front. So you have to be very careful, or we have to be very careful what lands we select that we want to put in, you know, we want to set aside for mitigation purposes. And I don't think we're not ready quite to make that choice yet. Liz, would you add anything to what I say?
Yeah, I was just going to add that in the Thomas Bay area, we did recommend selecting, the committee recommended selecting the Rock Pit and Thomas Bay, and then also about 13 waterfront parcels in that area. And even though that wasn't offered to us in our original certification, we're going to suggest that they provide it to us anyway.
Yeah, if and I said that wrong, I'm sorry, but yeah, yes, you're right. Yeah.
Cindy?
A point of clarification, either you, Bob, or Liz. The comment that you made about the mitigation lands, the mineral surveys have to happen prior to the land selection or prior to designating it as mitigation land?
The latter, prior to mitigation land.
Okay. I sucked in my breath there for a second.
Yeah.
So any other discussion on the map and the land selection?
Yeah.
One thing, I was looking over the maps and looking at different areas that we've selected, and I know I'm probably the only one on the assembly that supports the road to Cake, but if there ever was to be a road corridor there, and if there was a terminus at Prowlery Point, there's a section of land there that could be selected, and I was just wondering if that was addressed.
The committee looked at it, and it's a large acreage, about 600 acres, divided into two pieces. And so I think there was other things that they thought were more likely to be developed, and so that's why they didn't take that on the first go-around.
It's only divided in half, then.
Well, right. So you know how much of this land is not surveyed, and so the way DNR presents it to you are these really large chunks. And so what we've gone back and gone in there and areas that were surveyed at one time, we've kind of looked at the original Forest Service surveys and have been able to carve out smaller pieces of these big chunks so that we don't have to pay for additional survey costs. On that one, it looks like it's just two large chunks. I think they thought it was just too big a chunk to try and select at once, and then we'd have to go in and kind of figure out exactly what we would want. So they passed on the first go-around on it. So
that would be a good portion of the selection. I didn't realize that it was just only divided into
it looks
that
like
size
it's,
of areas.
Yeah, two big chunks.
But there's nothing that says we can't go in and select another 40 acres or some part of that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that says we can't do that. And that's an option.
Right. So that could be done in I'm assuming that we're going to try to go back and select more land for the second go around for
And I think we'll need to do that, make a kind of a second go. And then, as we talked about, I think we need to then work on a bill that we
right.
want for ours. But I think there needs to be a second selection of lands. I don't know how many acres we want to do, but a second set that the land we in the lands committee select that we want to go forward with, you know, because I don't think they're going to take all or give up all the lands that we have in, you know, that we have on our first go around.
So there will be room, wiggle room. Okay, so we have a selection of lands presented to us. Is there any other discussion? The clerk call the roll.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, resolution 2016-08 passes unanimously, and we will deliver this request to DNR. Next item on the agenda is community service budget request. We kind of talked this over quite a bit earlier, and I was didn't think we were going to take any action on this today. Is there any other discussion on these items that come to anybody's mind? Cindy?
Are we going to take action on it today or no?
No.
Okay.
I wasn't thinking we were.
The only thing that I would offer is I did see that there was, I think, $6,900 in TRT funds that are not allocated to the chamber. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what I would propose is taking that money and allocating that to KFSK and then using the other fund money to shift towards the wave request and maybe carving off a couple thousand from some of the bigger requests to at least half or 20% fund mm-hmm. them so they'd have a facility. And they said, I asked Annette during the break or before the meeting if they could live with partial funding, and they felt that they could make something work.
Something's better than nothing, in
right.
other words, yeah. Now, I was thinking we'd address this at our, you know, at the starting of the budget ordinance, which is next meeting,
okay.
And maybe with what we asked of the entities, you know, requesting funding to come up with a more clear financial statement of what their holdings are, if they have any investments, or, you know, some are more than likely going to be better off than others, and that, in my mind, would help me make my decision who to get the money allocated to them, so it's going to be harder and harder to do.
Go ahead.
I was just going to suggest making a motion to that effect to request those records.
Okay, that would make sense, yes. Is there Nancy?
I think that TRT money should stay where it is and be used for grants. And is there any way, Jody, that we can do it any other way?
Well, we actually don't do grants anymore with the TRT funds. That went away when we moved it to a special revenue fund. So it'll just build up there in that fund until it's given a use.
Okay, is there any other way to find money for them without shaving anything off anybody else's request?
Full funding? No. You'd have to cut something else in the general fund. Okay, we did have a $23,000 surplus, so there was that, you know, with the balanced budget. So there is that money, but, you know, we wouldn't be able to do the whole amount.
Okay, that makes sense. So I guess I'll entertain a motion to ask for the financial statements or whatever. Maybe Jody could word it properly.
You want a balance sheet, a list of other assets.
Yeah, I'll move that we ask for a balance sheet from each one of the the people who are asking for funds for the community services budget.
Is there a second? Okay, it's been moved by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Greger to ask for a balance sheet of the community service requests. And then, you know, I kind of feel the same. I mean, that request has grown since the budget was presented, and, you know, like Jody said, there's only a $23,000 difference from balanced budget and what we're presented. So if you add another 50 to it, I mean, it's going to definitely change things. So anyways, could be a good discussion item. Any other discussion on the motion that's on the floor?
Seems like a reasonable thing to request.
For me, I think it would help. I mean,
I don't disagree, but I also know, because I'm familiar with the chamber budget, that it doesn't tell, when you look at those, it doesn't tell the whole picture unless you know what's been put in each line item. For example, the chamber has $4,500 in gifts and entertainment, and to my knowledge, the chamber isn't giving away big gifts to people. I'm not sure what they are putting in that line item, but it may not tell the whole picture about how monies are being expended or what kind of assets they have. So we can ask for them, but we may not fully understand the information that is presented to us, is all I'm saying.
I bet there's somebody that will understand it.
We can ask.
Yeah, right. We can ask, yeah. So any other discussion on the community services budget idea? I guess the discussion will be talked about three more times as we go through the budget, the ordinance process. So. Okay, all those in favor of asking for the spreadsheet from the requesters, to clerk call the roll.
Jay?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, so we will move forward with that request. And now we have a letter from the North End Ferry Authority, or a request for a letter of support for a grant they want. I'd entertain a motion to draft this letter.
Mm-hmm. So moved.
Sure,
second.
The motion has been made by Member Greger, seconded by Member Lynn, to draft a letter. The North End Ferry Authority is requesting the Assembly send a letter of support to our legislators for a $117,000 grant application filed with the state of Alaska. If granted, the funds will facilitate Rainforest Island Ferry Service by funding a bow ramp extension to the MV Rainforest Islander, augmenting working capital during the initial full year of operations and retiring short-term debt. So that's what the letter they want us to support. I don't see any harm in doing something like that, but with the one ferry, one Alaska State ferry being sold, and two more are going to be mothballed pretty soon, as, you know, whether they'll get the money or not, who knows, but I guess it can't hurt to ask. Any other ideas, discussion?
I don't think it can hurt us at all to support them in that request for money.
Cindy, Bob, anybody, any comments? Okay, clerk call the roll.
Bob?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, we will draft a letter and send it to the state on the support of the North End Ferry Authority. Does anybody have any communications they'd like to report? Seeing none. Assembly discussion items. Is there any recognitions by staff or assembly today?
Yeah, I'd like to recognize all the time and donations that goes into the operation of a volunteer fire department. Just this last Thursday, during our business meeting, we found that there were over $500 that had been donated to the department from local contributions. That month alone, there have been over 300 hours of volunteer service, including training and actual emergencies. And without the public support and volunteers' very generous donations of their time, the department would cease to function, and we wouldn't be able to offer the same level of service to the community that they do. So I'd like to show appreciation for the volunteer fire department and all the members.
All right, thanks. That's a good recognition. Bob?
Yeah, I'd like to thank the Lands Committee for all their work on that first go-around of selections. There was a lot of work put into that effort. And I think they've done a pretty doggone credible job. There's some very knowledgeable, experienced people on that group that really helped out.
Okay, great. It all takes time. Any other recognitions? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to discussion on the marijuana ordinance.